Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Leader Rinaldo R. Robles, coming to the Monterey Peninsula in the Sylmar for 2 days only on Saturday, January 31st and February 1st, 2009. Seating is limited. Call now to 831-641-9812 to reserve your ticket to success at Inspiring a Sylmar Conference Grounds today. Call 831-641-9812. That number again, 641-9812.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor.
Governor Blagojevich is hereby impeached.
The Illinois House impeaching Governor Rod Blagojevich today. His reaction?
He said that that was a foregone conclusion. He expected the House to go against him and that he was looking forward to the Senate vote because in that case, there will be an actual judge presiding, and that he will have a better chance to make his case, and he was looking forward to seeing a different outcome in that chamber.
As WBBM reporter Craig Delamore, among the corruption charges Blagojevich faces, an attempt to sell President-elect Obama's vacant U.S. Senate seat to the highest bidder. Secretary of State Jesse White in Illinois steadfastly refusing to sign the certification papers that Senate leaders say are necessary to make that appointment official.
I could not and would not, in good conscience, sign my name to any appointment made by Governor Rod Blagojevich.
But the Illinois State Supreme Court ruling today, the Secretary of State's signature not necessary to seat Roland Burris. Senator Dick Durbin says the Senate will not seat Burris until the impeachment controversy is resolved. Mayor Baltimore indicted today.
I am confident that the city, my family, and I will weather this storm.
Declaring her innocence, Mayor Sheila Dixon is facing corruption charges. It's the Sabbath in Israel, but that's not stopping the military offensive in Gaza.
Before dawn, the Israeli airstrikes began. By nightfall, Israeli artillery rained down. Columns of armored personnel carriers were then on the move toward Gaza, and the lights in parts of the city suddenly went out. But just before it went totally dark, a Hamas rocket could be seen heading towards Israel, one of dozens fired today in spite of the Israeli offensive. Cami McCormick, CBS News at the Gaza border.
Today's labor report, highest unemployment rate in 16 years, but it could be worse than that. CBS News correspondent Anthony Mason.
As bad as the job number is, it's only part of the problem at this point. You know, as much as employers are laying people off, they're also cutting back hours, and in many cases, they're cutting back wages. So this goes even deeper than just the 7.2% unemployment.
It is one of the most posh resorts in America, the iconic Greenbrier in West Virginia. But in tough times, not as many folks spend a weekend there. The place losing $35 million bucks last year, in due in part to cancellations. Today, the inevitable job cuts.
Traditionally, the winter months are a slower time for the resort. However, these layoffs are significantly higher than we have faced in previous years.
Spokeswoman Lena Swan says one half of the Greenbrier's more than 1,300 employees laid off. Employees at an Idaho pizzeria have saved up more than $115,000 in tips during the past 13 years. They've got a week-long tropical vacation in Costa Rica coming. More than 60 employees and their families. They saved up enough money to cover the salaries for 1 week. Wall Street doesn't like what happened today, the Dow dropping 143 points. This is CBS News.
You ever have one of those days where everything goes right? First, I get the best parking space at work. Tonight, I have a date with the very lovely Rachel. And today, I gave a killer presentation in Sydney, finalized the contract in London, and demoed our new product in Boston. Online, from my desk, with WebEx. WebEx lets me take meetings and give presentations from my desk. I just talk to clients on the phone, and they watch what's happening on my desktop from their desktop. So I can travel the world and still be here for my date tonight with Rachel.
Travel less, meet online. Go to WebEx.com and try WebEx free. Just click the radio graphic and enter promo code 505 to get a free trial and a free webcam, too. Remember that code, 505. To qualify for the free webcam, WebEx, now part of Cisco and used by more than 5.5 million people every month. Give it a try, free. Go to WebEx.com and enter the promo code 505. WEBEX.com. Free webcams available while supplies last. Terms and restrictions apply. See website for details.
New Orleans, murder capital of the country. Disgusted with the continuing violence there, nonprofit group Silence is Violence with a rally.
A motorcade passed by New Orleans City Hall shortly before noon, the lead car displaying a banner that read, "In loving memory of Daniel Shavers." The murders of Shavers, a local musician, and of Helen Hill, the local filmmaker, were the events that galvanized the grassroots movement 2 years ago.
Anthony Brooks, age
today, 20, participants read aloud the names of 177 people murdered in New Orleans in 2008. Devine, organizers say continued vigilance is needed Marvin to keep the city's Lewis, leaders from becoming complacent. 19, Chris Miller for CBS Marvin, News, New Orleans.
The world's favorite silly old bear is back.
It's very, and then again... Christopher Robin, what is it?
Why, it's a brand new Winnie the Pooh book, authorized sequel, published this fall. It's called Return to the 100-Acre Wood. I'm Jim Taylor, CBS News.
Are you looking to hire experienced software and hardware engineers, DBAs, storage engineers, project managers? Then look to Dice.com. For over 17 years, Dice, the number one online technology job board, has focused exclusively on tech jobs. Post your open technology positions on Dice to access the best tech talent. Or search through thousands of resumes from qualified engineering and tech professionals from all across the country. Visit Dice.com. Dice.com.
If you've ever struggled with a sick kid while trying to get his temperature, you'll love the new temporal scanner by Exergen. It works like magic. Just press a button, gently scan your child's forehead, and get an accurate reading, just like that. It's safe, quick, effective, and used by doctors and premier hospitals. Imagine, no more sticking thermometers in ears or rears. You can even use it while your child is sleeping. The temporal scanner from Exergen, a better thermometer for your family, and the best money you'll ever spend. Available at the pharmacy.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
It's a fresh edition of the Peter B. Collins Show, beaming up and down the left coast, and now live in Boston, too. On the left coast, we range from the central coast in Monterey, California, all the way north of the Washington border into Canada. We're back on in Seattle on AM 1090. Weekends, great to have you with us.
Guess who just got back today? That wild eyed voice that had been away. Haven't changed, had much to say. But man, I still think them cats are crazy. They were asking if you were around, how you was, where you could be found. Told them you were living downtown, driving all the old men crazy. The boys are back in town, the boys are back in town.
Yeah, we got a lot of boys on the show today, and these boys are back in town in Seattle. Great to have you with us. Back in town. I don't want to give short shrift to Portland, Oregon, too. Listening on the weekends on AM 620 KPOJ. And our friends in Montana at KBSR in Laurel. Also good to have you with us. Wherever you are, however you happen to listen, I appreciate that you've found the Peter B. Collins Show. Robert Perry will join us in a moment to kick off the show today. Later this hour, we'll talk about the Obama economic plan, stimulus, tax cuts, and all that stuff. With Professor William Spriggs from Howard University. He's also a senior fellow at the Economic Policy Institute. And as I'll explain later, I hit the wall in Econ 101, so I always defer to economists. Next hour, a subject that's very important to me. We're going to talk about the wrongful conviction of defendants in the U.S. criminal justice system, and in fact, worldwide. An expert on the issue, Dean Ronald Huff, from the University of California at Irvine, the author and editor of a new book called Wrongful Conviction, International Perspectives on Miscarriages of Justice. We'll focus on California and the United States, but also give you some comparisons in other parts of the world. And during that segment, we'll be joined by Dr. Catherine Forrest, who is the founder of the Commonweal Institute, and she'll tell us about the case of a death row inmate just down the road from me at San Quentin State Prison here named James Anderson. And he says he's innocent. And in our final hour, Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com with a whole lot to talk about.
The Al Franken case out of Minnesota, he's been declared the winner, and there are court challenges underway. John Conyers has a new bill aimed at improving our electoral process. And also, Lori Grace will join us with an update on the challenges to Proposition 8, the gay marriage ban here in California. That's all ahead here on the PBC show. You can call in at any time, toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B. That's 1-888-573-8372. And my personal email is available to you, peter@peterbcollins.com. Robert Perry is a longtime investigative reporter. He publishes now at consortiumnews.com. His most recent book, co-authored with two of his sons, is called Neck Deep, The Disastrous Presidency of George W. Bush. It's not too late to read it. You'll weep no matter when you read it. Bob, welcome back to our show today.
Thanks, Peter.
First time in the new year. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you.
And so much happened during the holidays. We have decided to start every day with an update on the situation in Gaza. And we get daily dispatches from Sami Habib, who is a photojournalist and reporter who is inside Gaza. And, for example, he declares how difficult it is for him to file these reports because he has to risk his life to go charge up his laptop and his cell phone in order to get these messages out. He says that as of day 14, the civilian death toll is, the total death toll is 810, and the estimate is that 40 to 50% of those are pure civilians. Over 3,400 people have been wounded. And here's his description of Gaza today. No water, no beans, no fruits, no chicken, no rice, no bread, no markets, no shops, no medicines, no medical machines, not enough doctors, not enough ambulances, no fuel, no gas, no beans. Oh, he mentioned that before. But it is a very dire circumstance. And Bob Perry, I want to get your thoughts because you wrote a really thoughtful piece with some historical references called Israel's Looming Catastrophe. And like many other people who've commented on this issue on our program this week, there is concern that once again, Israel may be hurting its own self-interest through these military incursions that leave massive civilian casualties.
Right. I think one of the great mistakes that Israel has made, and it's reflected in the comments I've heard from some Jewish Republicans I know who describe George W. Bush as the greatest friend Israel's ever had. And in that is reflected the idea of using force to essentially kill your way to some security. And this really dates back to, I think, a big turning point in the late 1970s when Jimmy Carter, who I know this may be controversial, but I would say may have been the greatest friend Israel ever had, helped really push through the Camp David Accords, which created a peace settlement, an enduring peace settlement, with Egypt. And in the wake of that, Prime Minister Begin, who, of course, had, in his early days, had been a terrorist himself. He'd been part of the Irgun before the establishment of the Israeli state and founded the Likud party, the right-wing party, and he was prime minister at the time, and he was quite angry at Carter and really wanted to make sure Carter did not get a second term. But in that period, after Ronald Reagan came in, the Israelis moved to a much more aggressive approach. And the real downside is that, and the real problem is that at some point, you can't really get security that way. Israel really has to build security by integrating itself as a crucial part of the Middle Eastern neighborhood, as a leader of technology, science, education, finance, all these different things that Israel does so well. And only then, and not that that would be easy, frankly, but only then can Israel probably have some measure of security. The idea of reaching out far enough to stop the next rocket is just not tenable, especially when all this hatred is being engendered and all this violence is being committed. At some point, it's going to end up ending very badly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those of us who care for Israel and care for the Palestinians would like to see a whole different approach taken. And one, and really it was a concept, it was a path that Begin set off on in the late 70s that included the invasion of Lebanon in the early 80s and on, that really is a dangerous path for Israel, even though it may seem in the short term to be somehow satisfying to kill people that are in your way or try to intimidate them with force. Eventually there's going to be a missile or some way of delivering a warhead that is going to cause great harm.
Mm-hmm. And Bob, Barack Obama has been very cautious. We only have one president at a time, he says, and while he's running the economy now, he's not willing to run foreign policy for another 10 days or so until he's inaugurated, and that is understandable. He has sent signals that he would talk to Hamas, just as he has said he would talk to Iran and other people described as our enemies. And I counter that, which offers a certain level of hope about a dynamic change in the situation, with the fact that Hillary Clinton will be his Secretary of State if confirmed, and I expect that. And I don't see her with that same posture. Now, certainly, she's a politician, and she'll get her marching orders, and she can change her tune. But as the incoming Secretary of State, can you imagine her going to a meeting with Ismail Haniyeh, who is the leader of Hamas?
Well, I think if it happens, this sort of initial contact with Hamas anyway would be fairly indirect. It would probably involve intelligence services, possibly through Egypt. There'd be a sounding out of possibility of Hamas curtailing some of its activities that are terroristic or certainly counterproductive against some of their legitimate grievances and demands that there be ways for the people of Gaza to live a relatively normal life. So I think you'd probably see something that would be well below even the Secretary of State level with Hamas, assuming they do it. And there'd be a lot of pressure on Obama not to. And there's been some dialing back on some earlier suggestions that there might be something like this. So a lot of this is going to depend on whether or not the American people have finally had enough of this violent approach for security, and not just with Israel. Israel's not entirely at fault here. This has been the policy of the Bush administration and many other U.S. administrations to lash out, to be the tough guy on the block, and what is engendered in terms of hatred is quite incalculable. But certainly Israel is not alone in trying this approach. The United States allowed this approach to go forward. We invaded Iraq for reasons that are still rather murky.
Right.
But they had to do with the United States extending its reach of power into that region. So I think there has to be a lot of rethinking of these approaches and trying to figure out ways to do these things more peacefully and more constructively, which will not be easy. There will be extremists on all sides who will commit outrages. There's no question about that. And it's going to require a lot of patience and a willingness to absorb some of that. If things are going to be moved to ultimately a more secure footing where people are allowed to live out their lives. And so there's got to be a political awareness inside the American body politic, too, that we can't just be stirred up when some outrage happens. We just can't react with just mindless violence anymore.
And
I think that's the challenge.
And unilateral military action. I mean, that's the bad example that Bush has set.
Right. Maybe Bush's greatest gift to the world is that he's shown how catastrophic some of his ideas have been.
Yeah, unilateral action and occupation. The combination is toxic, and we're living through that, and I believe that's one of the fundamental issues driving this conflict between Israel and the Palestinians. We'll take a break and return with Robert Perry. Go to consortiumnews.com. They can use your help. Their fundraiser is still underway. You can also read Bob Perry's piece about the Washington Post editorial page, catching up with balance on this issue of Gaza. And there are also two great posts from people who are on the program this week, Mel Goodman and Ray McGovern. Find it all at consortiumnews.com. We'll continue here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
KRXA 540. Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Visit our website at krxa540.com.
Hey, this is Tom Hartman for Dr. Daniel Turner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry for 35 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place before your first oral examination. He interviews every new patient so he understands what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Does it seem like the service is lacking at most service stations? Not at Mid-Valley Valero and Shell on Carmel Valley Road. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell offer complete auto repair, smog inspections, major brand tires, 30, 60, and 90,000 mile service checks, complete brake work, and fix any electrical problems. They even provide environmentally friendly auto detailing. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell use only the highest quality original and aftermarket auto parts. Call Mid-Valley Valero and Shell at 831-624-0722. That's 624-0722. Remember, for all your automobile needs, only Mid-Valley Valero and Shell will do. Locally owned, Mid-Valley Valero and Shell. Putting the service back in service stations.
Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join Thinker Toys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why Thinker Toys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. Thinker Toys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com.
I'm Glenn Sadowski from Optimal Health Acupuncture in Monterey. Did you know that over one-third of all Americans have tried alternative medicine for relief from chronic pain, depression, asthma, and many other disorders? That acupuncture is safe and effective and has been in use for thousands of years? Or that traditional Chinese medicine treats not only your symptoms but the actual root causes of disease? At Optimal Health, we offer acupuncture, lymphatic, deep tissue, and hot stone massage, have a full Chinese herbal pharmacy, and for acupuncture, we accept insurance. Reclaim yourself at Optimal Health at 655-3208, where clients take a proactive role in their well-being, make informed decisions, and create healthier lifestyles. Call Optimal Health Acupuncture today at 655-3208 or on the web at OptimalHealthMonterey.com. Optimal Health, where you'll receive good medicine with great results. Think for yourself at Optimal Health.
Who said disco's dead anyway, huh? It's the Peter B. Collins Show, rocking your baby here, coast to coast, now live in Boston on AM 1510. Great to have you with us, New England. And we continue with Robert Perry, the investigative journalist at ConsortiumNews.com. And, Bob, let me stack up a bunch of things that developed this week in the Obama transition and get your comments. First of all, the legal team, both the Justice and the Critical Office of Legal Counsel, particularly Dawn Johnson at OLC, a sharp critic of her predecessors and the shoddy legal work she said came out of there on torture, detention, and other policies.
The naming of Leon Panetta, one of our favorite sons from California's Central Coast, as the outsider to try to clean up the CIA. There's resistance surfacing there. Plus some questionable appointments about Admiral Blair as the security czar, the intelligence czar, and Brennan, John Brennan from the CIA, being moved into a non-confirmation post on counterterrorism. And then the development of On the Hill of John Conyers, calling for essentially a Truth and Reconciliation Commission to air all the misdeeds of the Bush administration, at least for the record. And I wanted to get your thoughts on, you know, how much this relates to what you and I have been talking about for months, which is our fear that the Obama team will pass on really hard investigation and accountability for the serious lawbreaking of the Bush team.
Well, I think these are somewhat hopeful signs. I think Leon Panetta, I've known him since the 1970s when I was covering the budget on Capitol Hill, and he was one of the bright young members of Congress dealing with those kinds of issues. So he's a very thoughtful guy, and he's a person with some integrity. He stood up against Nixon's Southern strategy when he was a Republican in the Nixon administration, essentially resigned rather than go along, and he... From that to his more recent writings relating to opposing torture and opposing these kinds of very un-American activities that the Bush administration has made central to its approach on the war on terror. So I think that's a positive sign in terms of trying to get back to American principles and values. It may be a difficult task to tame the CIA, but it'd be interesting to see him try. But as far as the larger picture is concerned, I do think Obama and the American people have to demand a full accounting, and not just to get not just to get some kind of revenge, but what we've learned is that if you don't get this history straight and you don't learn lessons from these serious errors that have been committed, not just by this administration, but going back to the Reagan-Bush years in particular, they recur, and many of the same people come back, and they do the same kinds of things. So it's not just a matter of dealing with the past. It's really dealing with the future, and we must do this, as painful or difficult as it may be, as much as it may upset some Republicans, and there may be complaints that, well, we're not going to support you on some bill because you're looking into what George W. Bush did. This has to be an extremely high priority, and I understand that many of the in terms of people sending in ideas to the change.gov website that Obama has set up, mm-hmm. a lot of them are demanding this kind of a special prosecutor or some kind of action to get accountability. And Americans deserve it, and our history deserves it, and frankly, our future deserves it. We made this mistake before in 93 when Bill Clinton came in and essentially let all those unanswered questions about the Reagan-Bush years go. He swept them under the rug. He worked with some other Democrats and the Republicans in ignoring those things, and it did not help him. It did not help the country. And in many ways, the last eight disastrous years, where we now have a $1.2 trillion deficit and counting, as opposed to a balanced budget, mm-hmm. When George W. Bush came in, as well as thousands and thousands of people dying unnecessarily, those are all part of the price we have paid for the failure of Clinton and the Democrats in 1993 and the press and the Republicans in laying out an honest accounting of what had occurred.
Mm-hmm. Let me try to sneak in a caller here. Go ahead, Patrick. Got a minute.
Hi. I did want to adopt a book, too, if possible. Robert Perry, I wanted to touch on something you just mentioned about these crimes will recur if they're not addressed, going all the way back to the Reagan-Bush era. And the late researcher Mae Bressel would have said that, the same people go all the way back to Bay of Pigs, Kennedy assassination, October surprise, Iran-Contra. I wanted to know your comments on, some of these same names, the same networks, Reagan, Bush, Nixon.
Okay, let's stop there. I got 20 seconds. Go ahead, Bob.
Well, there's no question that is an important point, and we just learned recently from the LBJ Library about the fact that in 1968, when Nixon obstructed the Paris peace talks, That was kept secret. The thought was that would help the country not to let that come out. It did not help the country.
All right, gentlemen, thank you very much. Patrick, hold on. We'll get you a book. We are purging our books from the Bush bashing bookshelf and passing them on to Peter B. Collins listeners. Bob Perry, we'll talk to you next week. Thank you very much. And visit consortiumnews.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood File. This is Dave Ross in for Charles Osgood. A survey says it's all because business reporters failed to warn us. You have got to be kidding. More after this.
If you have irritable bowel syndrome, Digestive Advantage could be your best friend. It's a safe and natural, friendly probiotic made especially for you. Look for Digestive Advantage Irritable Bowel Syndrome and other Digestive Advantage products in the Digestive Aid section of retailers everywhere. Just remember the name, Digestive Advantage, a friend indeed. Mm-hmm. Digestive Advantage Irritable Bowel Syndrome is a medical food for the dietary management of IBS to be used under the supervision of your physician.
Are you a technology professional looking for a new job? Stop wasting time on general job sites, sifting through listings that are not relevant to you. Go to Dice.com. For over 17 years, Dice, the number one technology job board, has focused exclusively on tech jobs. Go to Dice.com to find tens of thousands of jobs all across the country. Software engineers, system administrators, web developers, and more. Visit Dice.com today. Dice.com.
Headline New York. Some of the nation's top financial journalists believe reporters dropped the ball as the nation's economy tumbled toward crisis mode. 62 of 100 journalists surveyed by Abrams Research suggested there was an over-exuberance about the economy and a failure to connect the dots as troubles began. Seriously? You really believe that? That there was no warning? Saturday Night Live was warning us.
Did you know millions of Americans live with debt they cannot control? That's why I developed this unique new program for managing your debt. It's called Don't Buy Stuff You Cannot Afford.
They ran this skit 3 years ago.
Okay, but what if I want something but I don't have any money?
You don't buy it.
Well, let's say I don't have enough money to buy something. Should I buy it anyway?
No.
I guess the problem is since it was on a comedy show, people thought it was a joke. Okay, but there were plenty of non-joke stories about Americans having no savings. And surely people saw the value of their homes climbing and said to themselves, wow, if I had to buy this house today, I couldn't afford it. But instead of being scared by seeing the house suddenly worth $500,000, they took out a home equity loan. The problem wasn't the reporting. The problem was this idea that greed is patriotic because we all know that in 1776, Adam Smith wrote in The Wealth of Nations that greed is good, and when everybody acts out of self-interest, nations prosper and the economy regulates itself. Except Adam Smith didn't say that. In fact, he pointed out that in a legitimate transaction, the only proper self-interest is for the seller to make sure the buyer also gets richer. But why am I quoting Adam Smith?
I think I got it. I buy something I want and then hope that I can pay for it, right?
No.
If that show had just had better ratings, we could have saved $1 trillion. The Osgood File, Dave Ross, on the CBS Radio Network.
The patient's not responding to the treatment.
I know. That imaginary jingle telling him to go where again?
Coffeetopia.
I've seen this condition before. It is very contagious.
What happened?
Nothing really. Everyone had a cup of coffee and a bagel. Speaking of which, let's go have a cup.
Where should we go?
Coffee, coffee, coffee-topia.
What was that?
And so, it begins again.
For the best coffee, tea, or smoothies in the Monterey Bay Area, visit Coffeetopia. With three locations in Santa Cruz, 3701 Portola Drive near Pleasure Point, 1723 Mission Street on the west side, and the newest Coffeetopia at 1443 Capitola Road in the Live Oak area. Coffeetopia is also the oldest internet cafe in Santa Cruz, with wireless and by-the-minute computer stations. Other places use ice as fillers for their smoothies, but not Coffeetopia. They use all fruit and juices when making their delicious smoothies, and they also feature tropical, high-energy, acai smoothies, bagels, and fresh baked goods.
Coffee, coffee, Coffeetopia.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
America's economy, and I guess the world's too, we're in a danger zone. So how do we get out of this mess? We print money, we borrow money, we spend money. And then what? I would like to begin this segment by acknowledging that I hit the wall in Econ 101. It was Eisner and Samuelson. I think my professor was Eisner and the book was by Samuelson. And so I defer to higher powers and those who know much more about economics than I do, and that's why we invited Professor William E. Spriggs on the program today. He is a professor and chair of the Department of Econ at Howard University in Washington, and he has been for many years a senior fellow with the Economic Policy Institute. Dr. Spriggs, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thank you for having me.
What happened to me back there? Why did I hit the wall? Do you have any advice? Is it too late?
No, it's not too late. It's not too late.
And what is it that makes it easy for an economist? Do numbers dance in your head?
I think it's the willingness to suspend belief.
Ah. So I'm too rational?
You're too rational.
Oh, really? Well, just when I thought I understood this supply and demand stuff, really things have gone out the window. And I want to get your thoughts on the proposals that are circulating in Washington right now. But first, if you would, give me your thoughts about the team that Obama has assembled, and in particular, the new Treasury Secretary, Tim Geithner. He seems certainly capable enough. My concern is that, as Barney Frank articulated on Friday in Washington, we really don't know what happened to the first $350 billion of the TARP funds. And the woman who's in charge of the professor who is overseeing that has been quite blistering in public that she doesn't see a plan. She doesn't see accurate records or, you know, what you and I would think of as receipts for the money that's gone out. A lot of it is being held secret, and even Bloomberg can't pry out the information about which banks have received capital infusions. And so it's a very murky world, and Tim Geithner is at the center of that. He's been working hand-in-hand with Bernanke and Paulson. And so I'm one of those people who's a little uncomfortable about the continuity in that part of Obama's cabinet.
Well, I think because President-elect Obama is quite clear, he wants a transparent government, wants a different tone, that when he's actually in charge, I'm fairly confident that Geithner will make this more visible than what we've experienced. So I think what's going on right now is it's still the case that President-elect Obama defers. There's still only one president, it's George Bush, and and the moment that changes, I think we'll see some other changes.
Mm-hmm. And do you personally have confidence in Geithner?
Well, I do. I think he's the right person for that position. It's exactly as you said. The TARP fund is somewhat mysterious. I think it does take someone who understands enough of the financial shenanigans that go on to read between the lines and challenge the bankers and those who receive the funds. And that's what it's going to take, is someone who has that inside information and confidence to do that.
Now, Professor, one of my other concerns, and I've already come clean here that I am no economist, but I am an observer and I read the news and I follow things as carefully as I can. And when I look at the fundamentals, not the ones that John McCain was lying about back in the campaign,
right,
but I look at the fundamentals here, that we haven't found bottom in the real estate market. We have not dealt with the viruses of these toxic mortgages that have been sliced and diced and securitized and, fanned out in ways that make it very difficult to ferret them out and clean them up en masse. And so my concern is that, we've thrown money at Wall Street. We learned today that the Bush administration negotiated deal with Detroit automakers includes an imposed no-strike clause for the United Auto Workers. Nobody asked me about that. And so as we're looking at these, I feel like we are throwing money at a falling target, and we don't know where bottom is. And until we get there, a lot of these efforts seem meaningless, wasteful, and downright frivolous.
Well, the ones to the financial sector may strike you that way because it isn't clear where the bottom is for the fall in asset prices, but they have at least gotten us this far with the banking sector still intact. I think the confusion for a lot of people is that the press presented the story to everyone as if the financial crisis were the economic crisis, and there's a difference between Wall Street and the real economy. So saving the banks didn't necessarily save the economy. The banks, the financial sector, it's the heart of the body. It makes sure that money can flow throughout the system. So restoring the heart is necessary, but it's not the body. So imagine that you've been shot 80 times. You have a heart attack. Well, of course, the doctor's going to tend to the heart attack, but then you still got all these bullet holes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the bullet holes that are going to kill you, and that's what we're trying to work on right now, are actually saving the body.
Well, I've got a slightly different metaphor for you that came through some collaboration with listeners who called in, and that is that we have a car that's disabled on the side of the road, and AAA came out and filled up the tank and left it sitting there with four flat tires.
Well, that's the legacy left over from the Bush administration. And, yeah, that's a similar analogy that you have the fuel to run on, but there are fundamental problems with the car. And that's what we're trying to resolve now. Over the last 8 years, we lost 4 million manufacturing jobs, which no one was discussing or trying to bring attention to. We were giddy because we were adding construction jobs and retail jobs, and now the construction jobs have disappeared because of the housing slump, and in a few months, a lot of those retail jobs are going to go poof. We've already lost several hundred thousand retail jobs as it is,
mm-hmm.
but that's just the beginning. So it is that the car still needs to be fixed, and the press constantly harped on Wall Street, Wall Street, Wall Street, and ignored the underlying economy. And we've seen that now in the auto industry because declines in demand are serious.
Mm-hmm.
We went from a peak of 16 million auto sales last year. Now we're looking at maybe 10 million for all of 2008. You can't lose a third of a market and think that there aren't going to be consequences.
Yeah. Well, and they talk about Wall Street, they talk about Main Street, but everybody knows the nightmares happen on Elm Street, and I don't think anybody's working on Elm Street right now. We're talking with Professor Bill Spriggs from Howard University and the Economic Policy Institute. If you have a question or comment, you can bring it on now, toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. So, Professor, tell me your thoughts about, just in the broad sense, of the packages that are being discussed in Washington right now. Because when they talk about stimulus, when they talk about shovel-ready public works projects, I'm supportive. When they talk about tax cuts, I am less excited, particularly the business tax cuts that they seem to be planning to include to bring along Republican votes, whether they need them or not. And in particular on tax cuts, I'm a self-employed small business owner, and next week I have to file my quarterly estimated tax. And I'm going to be paying in about one-fifth of what I paid a year ago because I didn't have a very good year in 2008. I don't believe I'm alone. And so I feel that some of that tax relief, even though I want Obama to follow through on his campaign pledges, it will not provide the kind of stimulation to the economy that we're looking for. So tell me your thoughts about the mix there and where you see the real benefit of federal spending at this critical time.
Well, let me do the federal spending part first because that's going to be so key. Over the last 8 years, we ran up trillions of dollars in debt. We now have a national debt that we measure in well above $10 trillion. And a lot of people would say, so what did you get for it? And when you look around, it's pretty hard to see what we got for it.
Well, we got some people in China who are holding a lot of our paper.
Well, that's what we got. So I think people who are skeptical of spending it on public infrastructure, at least you know where the money is going that's creating the debt. It's mm-hmm. creating an asset that we will all use. And so that's the difference here.
Mm-hmm.
The problem we have is that in the last 8 years, we didn't really have a recovery. We had the worst job growth in the eight-year history of any president of the United States. The first 4 year Bush did not generate any jobs whatsoever. The last 4 years, we're about to lose almost 40% of the jobs that he created. We've done that in the last 12 months. So we didn't generate jobs. The share of people with jobs did not reach the previous peak. The income of most households is below where it was when Bush took office. We could go on and on and on as the indicators that nothing really happened, except the economy did grow by some 20%, and mostly because the household sector took on about $4 trillion in debt. That clearly isn't going to happen again. People aren't going to borrow another $4 trillion. They can't. So if you don't have the household sector pulling you out as we did last time, businesses are not investing. They didn't invest in the United States over the last 8 years anyway. Most of their investment was direct investment overseas. So mm-hmm. we don't have the business sector. And for economists, there are only three sectors. There's household, business, the government. And given that we're losing now at the end of this year, the last year, 2008, we've lost almost 2 million jobs. The amount of jobs we're about to lose in the next 3 or 4 months is going to be very frightening. Somebody has to step to the plate to create those jobs. Mm-hmm. So if we don't have the government step up, it's not happening from consumption, it's not happening from business investment, that means we would continue to lose jobs, we would continue to spiral downward. That's mm-hmm. not a good solution.
All right. Now, what about the tax cut components of this overall package?
Well, they're not likely to achieve very much except to get people to vote for the package who don't want to vote for the more logical stimulus.
Mm-hmm.
The problem for the bottom 40% of the American income distribution, if you're in the bottom 20%, you already have a very small federal tax liability. So when the government, even with the Earned Income Tax Credit, steps in, you don't benefit. The Earned Income Tax Credit benefits low-wage workers when we're creating jobs and they work more hours. But the benefit level looks like a hill. So the incentive is to go up the hill. You get more benefits as you work more hours. The problem is when you're losing your job and you're forced to work part-time, which is now at a peak for the United States, people who are working part-time who want to work full-time, then you move from the top of the hill back down the hill. So you start losing benefits in the Earned Income Tax Credit. So the people in the bottom 20% don't benefit from tax cuts. The next 20% do benefit because, oddly enough, the way the structure of the Earned Income Tax Credit, as they lose their hours, they're working their way back up the other side of the hill.
Hmm.
So they actually benefit a little bit, but they don't owe very much in taxes. So most tax cut benefits, in an amount you would say, oh, you gave me some money. Because if you're at the bottom, you know, it's going to be, I gave you $40 or I gave you $80, which isn't going to go very far. But people in the middle definitely would benefit. And so there's some logic to the structure of mm-hmm. the tax cut that President-elect Obama is suggesting, in that he's weighted it much more to those in the middle. And so the relief that they need is going to take place. The mm-hmm. business tax credit, a lot of us rail against it, but the reality is it's not going to get used. We're upset about it, but it's really going to be on paper because businesses, accelerated depreciation, nobody's going to invest in anything. So
we're going to take a break and return with Professor William Spriggs. He is chair of the Econ Department at Howard University and a senior fellow at the Economic Policy Institute. Callers are holding. You'll be next here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
If you like people who talk funny, listen to Stephanie Miller in the morning on AM 540 KRXA. Ha!
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service has two locations to serve you better wherever you live. Both locations feature full-service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
One specializes in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for fast, friendly, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service, now located in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road in Soquel Drive in Aptos Village, across from the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Give Juan a call at 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Don't forget to ask Juan how KRXA listeners can save an additional 10% at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Hi, I'm Debbie LaSala from LaSala's Buyrite Market and Deli at 250 Casa Verde Way in Monterey. Buyrite has been a family-owned Monterey Bay treasure since 1938. Hungry for delicious sandwiches? Join the many LaSala regulars who love our tasty, hearty sandwiches prepared with fresh-baked Palermo bread. Eat in or grab on the run at LaSala's Buyrite Market and Deli. Whatever your choice, we at LaSala's will greet you with Mon Pa hospitality and truly awesome meals. And remember, sandwich trays are also available for meetings and parties. LaSala's Buyrite Market and Deli is located on the west side of Highway 1, exiting at 250 Casa Verde Way and going just past the first stop sign. For more information, call 372-6824. That's 372-6824. LaSala's Buyrite Market and Deli, a Mon Pa treasure at your service for 70 years.
Just because gas prices are low doesn't mean our troubles are over. Mother Nature's getting hot under the collar, our economy is in the toilet, and we're spending billions overseas to fill our tanks. Both kinds. Did you know local people have sold locally made fuel on the Central Coast since 2002? At the Green Station, our biodiesel is ASTM approved and is made from restaurant fryer oil collected right here. Did you know that electric cars were first built in the 1830s? Almost 200 years later, and our government still has plenty of money for oil wars, but not enough to jumpstart our renewable energy economy. 70% of all car trips in America can be done in a neighborhood electric vehicle. This will help save our planet and save you money. Zen neighborhood electric cars are at the Green Station now, and they can be charged by the sun. From local biodiesel to electric cars, bikes, and scooters, renewable transportation and a more peaceful world are just a call away. Call the Green Station today in Santa Cruz at 831-425-9100. Major credit cards are now accepted. That's 831-425-9100. Again, that's 831-425-9100.
This land is your land, but it is securitized by China.
As I was walking a ribbon of highway, I saw above me an endless skyway. I saw below me a golden valley. Yeah, this land was made for me. I roamed and rambled and followed my footsteps.
We're talking with Dr. Bill Spriggs, professor and chair of the Department of Economics at Howard University and a senior fellow with the Economic Policy Institute. I've got callers for you, but one more question from me first, professor. What do you think of Paul Krugman's Friday column in the New York Times, where essentially he says the Obama proposals amount to about a third of what he sees as needed here?
Well, it was, as I said, the $4 trillion in borrowing on the part of the household sector that kept us afloat the last 8 years. So a $1 trillion stimulus may not be big enough. I think the American people have to brace themselves for the serious nature of what we have ahead of us. Hopefully, we will see people be far more empathetic of the problems of those who don't have income than we've seen in the past.
Okay, well, we'll see how that all pans out here. We've got Steve and Salinas with a comment. Go ahead, Steve. You're on the Peter
hi.
B. Collins Show.
I'm reading a book right now called The Web of Debt, and the author would probably say that by giving the money to the bankers, it's kind of like giving it to the foxes, you know, guarding a hen house right now. Instead of putting it back in the economy, they'll just end up manipulating it like they do to, you know, manipulate profit, and it won't trickle down to the people to get back into society.
Steve, you're such a cynic. Do you think the banks will take federal money and just, like, pay it out in executive bonuses or something?
Well, I think we're on the precipice of a very scary situation. If the professor would agree with me, I think there's like $700 trillion worth of derivatives out there, and isn't the gross world product only about $60 trillion a year?
All right, I think that 700 number is very high. Is it not, Professor? Isn't it more like $70 trillion is the upper limit on derivatives?
Yeah. But nonetheless, the point that we have far more debt than real economic activity is correct. And as much as people want to blame the financial sector, when you look at what happened in the last 8 years and the amount of debt that was taken on, actually they were quite creative and did quite good at essentially borrowing from Peter to pay Paul, to borrow from Peter to pay Paul, to borrow from Peter.
Yeah.
So if they had not done all that shenanigans, we would have found that we were in deep trouble about 4 years ago. But it's a very difficult situation the government is in. If it had not pumped equity into the banks and given them a lifeline, then we would be in even worse position today. So though we have not benefited from it in a direct sense, it's keeping us from being in a worse position. I think it's very hard to understand for folks how serious the position we're in. But if you can hide $750 billion in the banks and they're not loaning the money and the federal government is willing to have 0% as the official interest rate, I think it shows you that we're in really, really, really bad trouble. So I think these numbers disturb people because we're not used to numbers on this size. We're not used to an economy in this kind of situation. But as bad as it is, it could be a lot worse.
All right, Steve, thank you for your question today. I appreciate that. Now to Eric in Santa Cruz, also listening on KRXA. Go ahead, Eric.
Peter V, I have a question. I'm learning economics myself, too. And I've been reading a lot of books, and you're talking about the fundamentals of the economy, and to me, it seems to me like there's nothing more fundamental than the Federal Reserve System itself. And my question, I guess, is, well, you know, I've been reading books like Creature from Jekyll Island, perhaps you've heard of that. Isn't the Federal Reserve Bank the cause of this boom-bust economy? Shouldn't interest rates be allowed to, shouldn't we have a truly free market? Isn't the Federal Reserve an example of a command economy, which the 20th century proved beyond any shadow of a doubt can't be done?
I think I can tell you have more questions, but let's stop there and get a couple of answers. Professor?
Oh, well, actually, the Fed, if it is the cause of the problem, is because it didn't use its regulatory authority and relied way too much on the notion that the free market unfettered could work. And I can only say thank goodness Alan Greenspan isn't there, that Ben Bernanke is there, because Greenspan never understood the need to regulate the economy. And the booms and the busts are really the effect of markets. It's not the effect of what the Fed did per se. Markets are human creation. People are speculating in markets about the future. They can start to act irrationally. And as we can see, they can bid up prices based on bad information, and some irrational actions can lead them into overpricing assets like they did for housing, and that's what we're facing. So, no, I don't think one could blame the Fed for being the cause for overregulating it.
All right, thank you. Thank you.
It underregulated.
Thanks for the comment, Eric. And we got 30 seconds here. Dave and Eureka, go ahead.
Well, Peter and Professor Fegg, I fear that our country has been so badly damaged in recent years that even if we got a highly motivated and appropriate government in place, is it repairable, do you think?
Oh, I think it is. I mean, this downturn is clearly going to be as severe as the one we had in the 1980s. And most of us lived through that one. This is a severe downturn, but I think because we have the right person in place as president, I'm confident that we're going to pull out of it just as we did in the 1980s.
Professor Sprigg, thank you for joining us today. It's a pleasure talking with you, and I hope to do it again.
Okay, thanks.
That's Bill Spriggs. He's professor and chair of the Econ Department at Howard University, also with the Economic Policy Institute. Coming up next, we'll talk about wrongful convictions with Dean C. Ronald Huff, right here on the PBC show.
Has your computer been slowing down? Are you having problems with your email? Or when you go to the Internet, is your browser taking so long to load that it seems like the worldwide wait? I'm Luke Ford, CEO of My Computer Works. We help people just like you with computer problems you can't fix. With one easy call, we can help you get your computer working the way you want it, speeding it back up, making sure you can send and receive emails, and making the Internet fun again. You'll speak to a U.S.-based technician who knows what they're doing, who can usually fix your computer on the very first call. If your computer's been slowing down, you can't get your email to work, your Internet's taking forever, or if you're not sure what's wrong, but your computer's just not working the way you want it, call My Computer Works, and we'll help you fast.
Call My Computer Works right now, toll-free, 888-629-9618. Tell them Peter B. sent you, 888-629-9618. One more time, 888-629-9618.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
An overwhelming vote in the Illinois House.
Governor Blagojevich is hereby impeached.
A bad end to a bad year for employment.
We've lost more than 2 million jobs, and there's no end in sight to this.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. Only one member of the Illinois House voted against impeaching Rob Blagojevich, the combative governor who's charged with trying to sell Barack Obama's Senate seat. But Majority Leader Barbara Flynn Curry, a fellow Democrat, says there's so much more.
The evidence we gathered makes it clear that this governor tramples on the legislative prerogative. He breaks state and federal laws.
Blagojevich reacted at a news conference.
The House's action today was, of course, not a surprise. It was a foregone conclusion. In fact, what the House did today, they've been talking about doing for the last couple of years.
He vowed to fight every step of the way, but Lieutenant Governor Pat Quinn says it's time to give it up.
Governor Blagojevich has lost the confidence of the people of Illinois. He's lost the consent of the governed. And under those circumstances, I think the proper course, as I've said before and many others have said, is to step aside and to resign.
Today, the state's highest court ruled that the Illinois Secretary of State is not required to sign the appointment of Roland Burris to finish Mr. Obama's term. And Illinois senior senator Dick Durbin said Burris should not be seated unless he gets that signature. Durbin also said the seat should not be filled until after the government's impeachment trial in the state Senate. The mayor of Baltimore, Sheila Dixon, has been indicted. Prosecutors say she accepted illegal gifts, including luxury travel and fur coats. She denies it.
I am being unfairly accused. Time will prove I have done nothing wrong, and I am confident that I will be found innocent of these charges.
In addition to the gifts, the mayor allegedly went shopping with gift cards intended for needy families. Now this.
How to update your bathroom without money going down the drain. Step 1. Take a look at all the stylish faucets and fixtures at the Home Depot. Step 2. Take advantage of all the new lower prices you see. Step 3. Step back from your gorgeous bathroom and take it all in.
Updating your bathroom is easier than you think at the Home Depot. We've lowered the prices on your favorite brands. Kohler, Delta, Moen, American Standard, and more. The Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. U.S. only. See store for details.
With Medicare Part D, you'll pay about the same copay anywhere. No wonder seniors are choosing America's most trusted pharmacy, Walgreens. There's no more shopping around for price, so join the millions by transferring your prescriptions to Walgreens. Just bring in your bottles and they'll do the rest. Not only will you get great service and convenience at Walgreens, you'll also feel safer knowing you have just one pharmacy helping you manage all your medicines. Walgreens accepts most Medicare Part D plans.
The unemployment rate jumped to 7.2% last month as the economy lost more than 500,000 jobs. That brings the number of jobs that disappeared in 2008 to 2.6 million. And things could get even worse. CBS News correspondent Anthony Mason talked to analyst Hugh Johnson.
The unemployment rate, many economists say, could still be headed sharply higher, at least until the Obama administration's massive stimulus package kicks in.
The real question is it big enough? Is it going to work? Nobody knows the answer to that question.
And by the way, those 2.6 million jobs lost last year, that's equal to the total number of jobs in some entire states.
Economist Peter Morici supports Barack Obama's call for a big economic stimulus package.
We've had 10 recessions since World War II. Each of those was self-correcting. That is, the economy would pull itself out. Which stimulus packages we had made the situation better, but they didn't solve the problem. They were self-correcting. Depressions are not self-correcting. That's the situation we're in now.
That's right. He said we're in a depression. The U.N. Security Council's call for a ceasefire in Gaza has had no effect on the fighting. If anything, it's escalated.
I'm Cammy McCormick at the Gaza border. There was a barrage of Israeli artillery aimed at northern Gaza just as the sun set. Columns of armored personnel carriers could be heard and seen streaming toward Gaza with more Israeli troops. And all day long, there were airstrikes, dozens of them. And in return, a barrage of rockets fired from Gaza into southern Israel.
The death toll on both sides is nearly 800 now. Word leaked out on Monday. Today, President-elect Obama made his choice of CIA director official.
In Leon Panetta, the agency will have a director who has my complete trust and substantial clout. He will be a strong manager and a strong advocate for the CIA.
He's tapped retired Admiral Dennis Blair to be Panetta's boss as Director of National Intelligence. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
You ever have one of those days where everything goes right? First, I get the best parking space at work. Tonight, I have a date with the very lovely Rachel. And today, I gave a killer presentation in Sydney, finalized a contract in London, and demoed our new product in Boston. Online, from my desk, with WebEx. WebEx lets me take meetings and give presentations from my desk. I just talk to clients on the phone, and they watch what's happening on my desktop from their desktop. So I can travel the world and still be here for my date tonight with Rachel.
Travel less, meet online. Go to WebEx.com and try WebEx free. Just click the radio graphic and enter promo code 505 to get a free trial and a free webcam, too. Remember that code, 505. To qualify for the free webcam, WebEx, now part of Cisco and used by more than 5.5 million people every month. Give it a try, free. Go to WebEx.com and enter the promo code 505. WEBEX.com. Free webcams available while supplies last. Terms and restrictions apply. See website for details.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
This hour of the Peter B. Collins Show will be heard on Sunday on Green 960 in San Francisco. And we welcome you to our broadcast. And this hour is rather personal for your humble host. And I'd like to tell you why. 10 years ago this week, my friend Dennis Jones was released from San Quentin State Prison. He had been sentenced on an open-ended, what they call a life top, 7 to life. The sentencing judge recommended that he serve only 7 years. But due to the politics of incarceration and the parole system here in California, Dennis Jones ended up serving more than 23 years. And a group of us got together and advocated for his release. At the start, it seemed an impossible task. Republican Pete Wilson was the governor, a tough-on-crime guy, who allowed paroles for less than 0.5% of the lifers who came before him in 8 years in Sacramento. Undaunted, we went out and talked to Carlos Santana, B.B. King, and Roy Rogers. They're all powerful musicians. And you'll hear their music this hour. This is Carlos playing right now. And in 1997, they came together for a benefit concert at the Paramount Theater in Oakland. And we were able to raise enough money to hire lawyers and investigators that ultimately broke open the case of Dennis Jones and permitted us to present information to the Board of Prison Terms, as the parole board was known at the time. And they voted to release him. And he was released in the first week of 1998. And I consider it really one of the greatest achievements of my life. And I am pleased with my radio career and many of the things that I've done in this arena. But for me, there's nothing more satisfying than knowing that 10 years after his release, Dennis Jones remains free as a productive member of this society and has worked to help others who are incarcerated win their freedom, particularly those who are completely innocent of the crime that sent them to prison. Joining me this hour is a man who has been a friend and supporter of Dennis Jones for many, many years. He is an expert on wrongful conviction. He came from Ohio State University and a few years ago moved to California. C. Ronald Huff is now Dean of the School of Social Ecology and Professor of Criminology, Law, and Society, as well as Sociology, at the University of California, Irvine. And he is a contributor and the editor of a new volume called Wrongful Conviction, International Perspectives on Miscarriages of Justice. Ron Huff, it's great to see you again.
Peter, it's wonderful to see you again.
Well, and this is a great occasion, and there's an event tonight that you and I will be attending with many other people who supported the aspirations of Dennis Jones. And it's emotional for me to talk about it. And I am just so thrilled that after 10 years that we can come together and see how it worked for him. But there still remain thousands of people. There are 165,000 incarcerated in California. And based on the most conservative estimates, about one-half of 1% are acknowledged by prosecutors as probably innocent of the crimes that landed them in jail, many on death row. And so I'd ask you to give us a quick overview of the criminal justice system in the United States and the degree to which people who we lock up, sometimes for life, sometimes sentenced to death, are completely innocent of the charges that they were convicted of.
Peter, when I first started doing this research in the 80s, one of the questions we looked at is, how often does it happen? And no one can say for certain, because we don't have knowledge often until it comes to public attention that there was an error. So we don't have anybody keeping statistics on the number of wrongful convictions. But what we did at the time I was at Ohio State, we did a survey that included 54 attorneys general of all the states plus territorial possessions of the United States. And in Ohio, which is a very representative state, we did a very conservative sample, heavily loaded with people who would be defenders of the system. We only had 28 public defenders, for example. We had all the prosecuting attorneys. We had the chief judges of the common pleas courts, which is like the Superior Court in California. Mm-hmm. We had the sheriffs, the police chiefs. We asked them to estimate how often this occurred in cases of felonies. And that's where we came up with our one-half of 1%, which by most accounts is probably a pretty conservative estimate. Mm-hmm. You know, you would think that they would be underestimating.
Right.
The bad news is our system in the United States is so large that a very small error rate generates thousands and thousands of wrongful convictions every year.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the next segment, we're going to talk with Catherine Forrest. Dr. Catherine Forrest is a co-founder of the Commonweal Institute, and she is an advocate for James Anderson, who is on death row at San Quentin right now. And we have the experience now of Illinois. And, of course, Illinois has been in the news a lot because of governors who run afoul of the law. And it's deeply ironic that George Ryan, a preceding governor to Blagojevich, a Republican, was principled enough to clear death row in Illinois. He became convinced that there were so many flaws in the capital criminal system in Illinois, and he became convinced that many of those on death row were completely innocent, that he cleared it. He commuted sentences, and he freed a number of individuals. individuals. He's now behind bars himself for an unrelated issue. But Illinois really opened a lot of people's eyes to the depth of the problems in our criminal justice system, particularly as applied to capital offenders.
Here's Governor Ryan sitting there as governor of Illinois. There's a period of time where he suddenly realizes more death sentences have been overturned than have been able to be upheld. And he said, something's terribly wrong when you're having more errors than accuracy. So he created the moratorium. A number of other states followed that. Unfortunately, not enough. But he was really a pioneer, and it's completely unrelated to his own problems he's had since then. But it was a very courageous thing that he did.
The other marker here, if we had a scoreboard of people wrongfully convicted, is the Innocence Project. And many people learned of Peter Newfield and Barry Scheck from the O.J. trial. I don't know this for a fact. My speculation is they took the money they made on that trial and put it into the startup of the Innocence Project. What is the current count of the number of inmates who have been released and exonerated as a result of primarily DNA work that's been done by that group?
Well, it changes monthly. It's in the hundreds. And, you know, it's really an underestimate because they only deal in cases where there's biological evidence available to be tested. And the sad part is, in most cases, we don't have biological evidence. And another sad part is that if you look at things like rape kits, they're not all kept as long as they should be kept. Some places have systematically destroyed them. They don't store them properly. There could be more of these exonerations. And the other point I like to make, Peter, for our listeners is people say, oh, this is some great liberal issue. Well, it's a liberal issue in the sense that people's rights are at stake, their freedom is at stake. It's also a public safety issue. Every time we get the wrong person and lock them up, the real offender is probably still out there, and as I like to say, may be visiting you and your family soon.
Yeah.
So it's good that we get the right person, not the wrong person,
right,
for both civil liberties and for public safety.
And that's only in the self-interest of people, their own concerns about safety. There's also a very basic human rights issue that no one deserves to be incarcerated for life or subjected to the threat of the death penalty when they're innocent of the crime that they were convicted for. It's very moral and simple.
Well, moreover, the existence of the death penalty, I've argued in my book, earlier book, is itself an inducement to plead guilty. So if one is facing the death penalty and one is innocent, you might think, okay, there's some circumstantial evidence here. If I roll the dice, I may die. If I plead guilty and get at least a life sentence, then maybe the evidence will come out that I can be freed someday. So it's an inducement to plead guilty. Mm-hmm. And I think it's another reason not to have the death penalty.
Yeah. Also, in non-capital cases where an inmate is innocent, it becomes a real barrier to the parole process because most typically an inmate is required to admit guilt and accept responsibility. And when you come in and say, would you please release me? And they say, well, do you accept responsibility? And you say, well, in fact, no, because I didn't do it. Well, then they accuse you of being in denial. They think that you're sick, mentally ill, and it then becomes a whole reason to extend your incarceration.
Well, that's true, and they think you're not rehabilitated, you don't have remorse, let alone starting something like the Freedom Foundation, which seems to fly in the face of some officials who say, now wait, you're really challenging the system now.
Yeah.
When, of course, that's one of the most courageous things that that our friend Dennis Jones ever did for people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're going to take a break and continue. As I mentioned, Dr. Catherine Forrest will join us in the next segment. I encourage you to pick up Ron Huff's book. It's called Wrongful Conviction, International Perspectives on Miscarriages of Justice. And our bumper music this hour from the musicians who helped Dennis Jones win his freedom. Here's B.B. King along with Eric Clapton. This one's called Riding with the King. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Hey, this is Tom Hartman for Dr. Daniel Turner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry for 35 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place before your first oral examination. He interviews every new patient so he understands what is important to you, and because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, inexpensive Mandarin and Cantonese food prepared to order every day. The May family invites you to savor their authentic Chinese dishes and tasty soups like congee and wonton noodle. Jim's specials are still $5.75 for lunch and $6.75 for dinner per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget Jim's is tops for takeout and catering too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
We all know the economy's experiencing some rough times, but some people seem to thrive even in tougher times than this. Want to own their secrets for yourself? Now you can dissolve away your own barriers and blocks to prosperity and success in life despite negative circumstances. Attend a very special transformational two-day event in beautiful Asilomar. The Monterey Center, your one stop for mind, body, spirit wellness, proudly presents How to Prosper and Flourish with international personal transformation and success leader Rinaldo R. Robles, coming to the Monterey Peninsula in Asilomar for 2 days only on Saturday, January 31st and February 1st, 2009. Seating is limited. Call now to 831-641-9812 to reserve your ticket to success at Inspiring Asilomar Conference Grounds today. Call 831-641-9812. That number again, 641-9812.
Peninsula Gem and Jewelry in Monterey is like no other store on the peninsula. 30 years family owned and operated, Peninsula Gem specializes in finished jewelry, jewelry repair, and custom design. Supplying tools and materials for the jeweler and lapidarist from precious metals to cutting materials. Check out the spectacular Monterey Jade and other collectible minerals. Great gift ideas too. Peninsula Gem and Jewelry is at 2245 North Fremont Street, right next to Big Five in Monterey. Open Tuesday through Saturday. Peninsula Gem and Jewelry.
Good afternoon. This is Via Kareem with your KRXA 540 AM traffic and weather report. Right now in Monterey on the 1 at Rocky Point Restaurant, we have a report of a no-injury collision. In Salinas, we have a traffic hazard on the northbound 101 just south of Highway 68. There's a large plastic tank in lane number 1. In Santa Cruz, on the southbound 1, just south of Highway 129, we have a three-vehicle collision with an ambulance responding. CHP is on the scene there. And on Soquel Drive at Park Avenue, we have a no-injury collision. In weather, we're having a beautiful, gorgeous, sunny day. We've got highs in the mid to low 60s right now. Tonight, temperatures will be dropping down to the low 40s. The weekend looks fantastic, everyone. It's going to be another gorgeous sunny day tomorrow with highs in the mid-60s to lower 70s. Well, that's your traffic and weather on AM 540. The Peter B. Collins Show is coming right back.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Dean Ron Huff in the studio with me. His latest book that he wrote parts of and edited all of is called Wrongful Conviction, International Perspectives on Miscarriages of Justice. And joining us now from Menlo Park, the site of the Commonweal Institute, is its co-founder, Dr. Catherine Forrest. Dr. Forrest, welcome to our program today.
Thanks so much, Mr. Collins.
And Peter, please.
Peter, okay.
We reserve the mister for the arresting officer and the sentencing judge, and I've never had to confront that.
Mercifully, thank you.
Take a moment, because I've talked with Barry Kendall and others from your institute, but explain to our listeners the mission of Commonweal.
The Commonweal Institute is dedicated to promoting the development of a strong progressive infrastructure and helping progressives be more coordinated in what they're doing, be more articulate in getting messages out about progressive values and the ways that we believe that the interests of the powerful have to be balanced against those of ordinary people.
Mm-hmm. And how long have you been at this yourself?
Since 2001. Okay. I was the co-founder of it with my late husband, Leonard Sale.
Mm-hmm. So, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but my sense is that separate from your work at Commonweal, you have taken an interest in the case of a death row inmate at San Quentin named James Anderson.
That's true. Actually, my contact with James Anderson came about because he, on the radio, heard Barry Kendall and me interviewed on the Joan Collins show.
Oh.
And we were on for an hour talk program.
I think that's Joan Kinley, right?
I'm sorry, Kinley.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Sorry, mixed up there.
Uh-huh.
He contacted me then afterwards because he said he really liked what he was hearing and he wanted to be able to direct us towards some artwork that he had done because he was hoping that we might be able to use it
mm-hmm.
in some way. Initially, you know, disconcerted by being contacted by someone on death row, I didn't even respond to the call. And it only when somebody else that he had contacted got hold of me again to explain what was going on, then Mr. Anderson and I started communicating. And we talk on the phone probably once a month
mm-hmm.
at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So I've gotten to know quite a bit about him, and we've written back and forth as well.
And give us a quick sketch of his case and his claim of innocence.
Yeah. He's currently 54 years old, an African-American man. He's on death row in San Quentin. And this relates to murder of two women in 1979. So he's been incarcerated for more than half of his life. The circumstances were that he, a woman he was dating, and her brother were driving. They stopped to help two women who were who had a car that seemed to be broken down, and during a variety of sort of startups and stops and going, people going off and walking with other people, what ended up happening is the two women were found murdered
mm-hmm.
subsequently, and James said he was never alone with either one of them, and he believes that the murderer was actually the brother of the woman who was his partner, so the man of the three of them who were in the car. At one point I said, you know, he would tell me pieces of the story different times. I said, James, just write it all down as a coherent narrative. So
mm-hmm.
I now have the whole story as he says that it happened.
Mm-hmm. And he doesn't have the benefit of DNA evidence, is that correct?
Not to my knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, some of the evidence there seems to have been got lost. The story is the one that illustrates how completely inadequately people on death row, if they don't have money, how badly they can be served by the legal system. He says that his initial attorney, who was a public defender, told James after James was convicted and put on death row, but in fact this had been his first death penalty case. There was so much that he didn't do, including various kinds of investigations.
And let me jump to Dean Huff here, because this is one of the critical issues. The original prosecution is where evidence is presented and exoneration can occur. Once you get convicted there, all the appeals are on technical issues, and mostly you never return to the core question of guilt or innocence. Is that right?
That's right. You usually have to have new evidence that hasn't been brought forward before, and we don't have anything like an appeal based on factual innocence.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a real problem, and a lot of the evidence even gets lost, or as she says, maybe wasn't preserved correctly over time.
Yeah,
and things that he said were items that were never even brought forth as evidence.
Yeah,
the
omissions, and
some of that
can come from bad representation by defense counsel, and some of it can come from obstruction by the DA and the police.
Well, another thing that he said happened is that the woman of the three of them was also imprisoned at the same time that he was, and that she was sending him messages while he was there in prison saying that she believed that her brother, who had fled the whole area.
Mm-hmm.
She believed that he was the killer, and she had written multiple messages to him, to James, who was the fellow prisoner, saying this, and that she would be testifying on James' behalf. And then what happened is that the judge apparently inappropriately allowed the brother to come back and visit her in the jail, after which she changed her story and said mm-hmm. he wouldn't defend James.
Dr. Forrest, we need to take a break here. Can you stay with us for a few more minutes?
Sure.
All right. We'll pick up after the break and talk a little bit more about the case of James Anderson and the general notion of innocent people on death row in California or elsewhere. Catherine Forrest is co-founder of the Commonweal Institute, and C. Ronald Huff is the dean at UC Irvine and the editor and author of this new book, Wrongful Conviction. We'll take a break as Roy Rogers rocks us into it here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Thank you, Roy.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Another crisis. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. Another crisis. The switch over to digital TV.
Barack Obama is joining the chorus of people calling for Congress to postpone the switchover.
There's a switchover crisis. In 5 weeks, television in America goes digital with better picture, better sound, zero interference. However, if you have an old TV hooked to an old antenna, all you'll get come February 17th is snow. And we've had quite enough of that. But wait, wasn't the government handing out coupons to buy the converter boxes? What happened to the coupons?
The government was supposed to provide $40 off coupons for the boxes, but ran out of them this week.
Ran out? Now hang on here. There was money for 33,500,000 converter boxes. There are 19 million Americans who rely solely on TV antennas. Everybody else has at least some access to cable. Their antennas fell off the chimney long ago and they never even noticed. So that means there were enough coupons to convert almost two TVs in every household that needed it. So what's gone wrong?
Saleswoman Crystal Stroop says they've been selling as many as 10 digital converters a day, though customers aren't sure they really need one.
Until they get home, and then they try and hook it up, and they're like, oh, so, something's not right here.
For heaven's sake, you people who have cable and don't need the boxes have been getting coupons for them anyway. We don't need another crisis. If you bought a box you don't need, please take the box, drive through the neighborhood until you spot somebody with an antenna, and leave that box on their doorstep. Let's make sure every American gets to see Jack Bauer torturing terrorists. Now this.
Hi, I'm Sarah. I design and sell my very own line of baby clothes. When I started my business, I knew how to make the baby clothes, but I didn't really know the business side of things. And it became very clear that I needed help. So I'd heard about Intuit QuickBooks, that small business software, and thought, that's just what I need. Then I saw I could try it for free, and you know what? It's been great, totally easy to use, and it's helped me avoid a lot of growing pains.
Intuit QuickBooks. Get back to business. Try it for free at QuickBooks.com.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio.
What would life be without flowers? It would be like a birthday cake with no candles, a wedding with no ring. It would be like a graduation without friends and relatives, a promotion without a raise. Thankfully, life is full of flowers and reasons to give them. In fact, sometimes the best reason is no reason at all. And all you have to do is stop by or call Ferrari Florists and Gifts. You see, flowers from Ferrari Florists and Gifts are more personal and special because whatever you're celebrating, we can create unique arrangements from a wide selection of fresh-cut flowers, and we can deliver them the same day. So you can enjoy life and even declare your love with flowers. Call Ferrari Florists and Gifts today at 460-7000 or visit our website at www.ferrariflorist.com and we'll help you realize the true potential of flowers. Ferrari Florists and Gifts, 514 Front Street, Santa Cruz, experts in the art of expression.
House and protect your investment.
Custom painting.
Call Don Dickman Painting for a free estimate.
Don Dickman Painting, serving Monterey Peninsula and the Big Sur Coast. Quality paint jobs and green painting solutions are fast and affordable. Call 667-2144. For a free estimate, call 667-2144. That's 667-2144. I'm Don Dickman. When quality counts, let us protect your investment. You're in good hands.
With Don Dickman Painting.
We're at www.dondickmanpainting.com.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. We're talking about wrongful convictions, and that's the title of a new book. Dean C. Ronald Huff from UC Irvine is in the studio with us. And we're also continuing our conversation with Dr. Catherine Forrest, co-founder of the Commonweal Institute, and separate from that, an advocate for a death row inmate who's currently been at San Quentin for more than 28 years and professes total innocence for the crime he is convicted of. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the hour, Ron Huff is in the Bay Area today to join me and many others in celebrating the 10 years of freedom for our friend Dennis Jones. I met Dennis at San Quentin in the mid-1980s, and one of the things he did was put on a concert for the inmates featuring B.B. King. And it became the Grammy Award-winning release called B.B. King Live at San Quentin. And years later, B.B. King was doing a concert at Shoreline Amphitheater in Silicon Valley, on the peninsula here. And I got a friend to let me pose as a roadie so I could go backstage. And I pulled some cables and carried some guitars, but my real mission was to get to B.B. King because he was the headliner that night. And when his bus rolled into the backstage area, I timidly went up and knocked on the door, and I said, "Can I speak to Mr. King?" And there was a pause, and the guy came back and said, "Okay." And I had met him in the 70s, interviewed him at my radio show in Chicago, but I didn't expect him to remember that. So I said, "I come with greetings from Dennis Jones." And without missing a beat, he said, "How is Dennis? I remember the gig at San Quentin." And so then I asked him, "Would you do a benefit concert?" And again, without missing a beat, he said, "Sure. Here's my manager's name. Call him. Tell him to put it on the schedule." And a year later, that happened, and in the same process, I called up Carlos Santana, who had once come into San Quentin and met Dennis Jones, and after a couple of minutes, Carlos said, "Yeah, I think I can do that." And then I called Roy Rogers, and he agreed to be the opening act of that benefit concert. So that's why we're playing these particular songs this hour, and we're celebrating the freedom of one man as we work for the liberty and the rights of many others. Dr. Forrest, as we talk about the case of James Anderson, let me just zoom out because he is not alone. And we have a whole structure that assumes that once somebody is convicted and sentenced to death, that the legal process will ensure that an innocent person is never put to death. And I have in front of me here a statement from the website of the California District Attorneys Association. And it says, "California effectively protects defendants against errors and prevents prosecutions of innocent persons by providing copious protections in death penalty trials." Do you consider that an accurate statement?
Not based on what I've heard from Mr. Anderson, because it sounds like he has not, as he puts it, he has never once had an attorney assigned to him who was not either disbarred or seriously disciplined by the Bar Association, or had psychological problems ranging from manic depression to alcoholism and depression at the point of contemplating suicide.
Wow.
And one attorney he was assigned to for 10 years saw him twice during that period of time. When Mr. Anderson finally asked him if he could see the documents which this person supposedly had filed on his behalf, the attorney got very defensive, and he said he wasn't going to show him anything, and so he finally managed to get him off his case, only to find out subsequently that that attorney had previously been an assemblyman who had written legislation that resulted in the death penalty being reinstated in California.
Wow. Dean Huff, is that statement accurate, and are her comments accurate?
Well, to talk about the inadequacy of counsel, especially, is a problem. Since the Scottsboro Boys case in Alabama, that's been a reason for an appeal, is to say you have inadequate counsel. Unfortunately, we don't have a level playing field. The prosecutor usually has far more resources to work with than the defense attorneys. We have a national crisis right now in terms of the funding of defense attorneys. They just get very meager amounts of money to go out and investigate.
Yeah, isn't the appellate project in California paying attorneys less than $50 an hour?
I don't know what it is currently, but it's far too little. In many places, it's $50, and they don't have the investigative staff that the prosecutor does. And a lot of these defense attorneys depend solely on the evidence that comes that the prosecutor's office has from the police, and that's not the best way to put on a defense. And so. That's a huge challenge that we have. It's not the other thing about the death penalty. I just want to say quickly is it's a real anachronism, because if you think about what happens when somebody, even say, is a mass murderer or serial murderer, and they go and they get caught in another country like in Europe, if the United States wants to extradite them, what happens? The first thing they'll say is, we won't extradite him unless you promise not to execute him. So we will agree. In some cases, to get the guy back, we will agree not to have the death penalty. But if somebody's caught here, we have a death penalty. So this is a real anachronism that can't stand.
Yeah. Dr. Forrest, I want to move on to some other issues with Dean Huff. Is there anything you'd like to close with regarding Mr. Anderson or these issues in general?
Just that I've been impressed by the courage of this person who said he has been trying to maintain as normal a life as he can, despite where he is. And I really think that he, like probably a number of other people who are incarcerated, deserve to be treated better by the system.
Well, thank you very much, and give my best to everyone at the Commonweal Institute.
Thanks a lot.
That's Dr. Catherine Forrest here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Dean Huff, in one of the chapters that you contributed to this book that you've edited, Wrongful Conviction, you describe the key causes of wrongful convictions, and let's just go through each one and maybe, you know, give us a brief comment on that. You say that the number one cause is eyewitness error.
That's correct. And let me say quickly that in most cases we have more than one factor that combines to create wrongful conviction. I use a phrase that a colleague of mine, Diane Vaughn, now at Columbia, when she studied the Challenger disaster from NASA, she concluded that it was an incremental descent into poor judgment. And that's usually what we see in the justice system. Sometimes people start out to frame someone, but usually it's not that they start out to frame someone. It's that they end up rubber stamping decisions made elsewhere. And eyewitnesses come forward and they get either lineups that are not properly constructed, they have foggy memories, they may be looking at a gun, and they say they remember, but they're terrified by looking at a gun. And it turns out that they're very, very unreliable. So that alone, if you did a factor analysis, that is the single leading thing that's correlated with this. And that's true for Barry Scheck's Innocence Project database as well.
Okay. Now, you also talk about overzealous or unethical police and prosecutors. And what comes to mind for me is the Rampart scandal in the Los Angeles Police Department.
Right. And Officer Perez, when he testified, said, you know what, we thought it was us versus them. We had to get convictions, so we planted evidence. We did everything we could to get these guys off the street. They look at these guys as scumbags, and they'll say, well, if he didn't do this, he did something else.
Yeah,
and so
we're doing everybody a favor, because even if this is totally concocted, he's bad.
Right.
And you know, this mentality has crept into the federal government and the whole Bush administration detention and torture program at Guantanamo, where it's, you know, we don't know if Saddam's, or I'm sorry, if Osama's driver, you know, was actually in on war plans. But, hey, you know, he's a bad guy. He's a member of Al-Qaeda. And they don't make any distinction between levels of culpability. And this also creeps in with minimum mandatory sentencing and some of the draconian drug and pornography laws that have been passed in the last 20 years.
Historically, you know, we can go back to the Salem witchcraft trials. Whenever we perceive we have this moral panic, whether it's the witches of Salem or it's today's terrorists.
I just learned that term from your book, moral panic.
Moral panic.
Yeah.
We're willing to suspend civil liberties because of the moral panic. We're all at great danger of something. It's either immigrants, that we're afraid of immigrants. We're afraid of witches. We're afraid of terrorists. And so we suspend all these precious civil liberties that we fought so hard against the British when we became independent to establish in the first place.
Yeah. I want my Fourth Amendment back, by the way. I say that every chance I get. False and coerced confessions and improper interrogations.
Yes, we're now trying to deal with this by having recording, continuous recording of interrogations. That's true in Australia. Canada has a lot of that. There are places in Minnesota that do it.
But Schwarzenegger has twice vetoed bills that would require that in California.
Well, I think we should have it, and we should have a continuous record of what was asked and what was said, because if you're there and you're induced to confess through a long period of interrogation, we know that a lot of those confessions are false confessions.
Yeah. We also know, and this is not directly related to what we're talking about, but we have this incident this past week that has burgeoned in Oakland that produced a small riot. A BART police officer, a rapid transit policeman, just after New Year's started on the first day of the year, was captured on camera phones by numerous passengers as he was seen wrestling with this guy. And ultimately, this young man named Grant was 22 years old. He was face down. It's unclear whether he was handcuffed. But many people captured this as the young man was shot by the police officer, and it's produced quite a scandal. And I think it shows that the police should be keeping their own video and audio records, because in a YouTube era, somebody's got it, and there should be their side of the story captured as well.
Well, the fact is that usually when you have these video things in patrol cars, or you have it usually helps law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
It usually is a record where the defendant says, "Well, this didn't happen." You say to the jury, "Here's the tape."
Yeah.
So if you didn't do anything wrong, you shouldn't worry about having it on tape in terms of what the police do.
Inappropriate use of informants or snitches. And this also creeps into the so-called war on terror, the Lodi Mosque case, FBI paid informant, the most recent Fort Dix case, FBI paid informant with a bad criminal record of his own. And we see that in almost all of those prosecutions.
There was a huge snitch scandal in the Los Angeles County jails, led to the wrongful conviction of a number of people based on snitch testimony. The irony is, for your listeners, they can imagine this, prosecutors have these guys with records that are locked up. They're loath to believe anything they say when they're a defendant.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, they're pure as the driven snow when they're a snitch.
Yeah. Sad, but amusing in a certain way. Forensic errors, incompetence, and fraud.
Yes, we had the case of Fred Zane, and the West Virginia so-called forensic scientist who trumped up evidence. They couldn't get the goods on anybody. They were having trouble convicting people in certain cases. But Fred would always come in with this wonderful scientific evidence and show that they did it. It turned out, unfortunately, Fred made it up. And even when they don't make it up, we have a lot of what's called bench errors in laboratories, where people simply make errors.
Mm-hmm.
And it's wonderful science when it's accurately done. And now with mitochondrial DNA, we can distinguish everybody on the planet from each other unless you have the same biological mother. But it presumes that the lab work is accurately done and that the evidence is accurately maintained through a chain of evidence custody.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that is very critical.
It's very critical.
The chain of custody in many legal issues is absolutely a very important element. And let's see, there's one other item here, ineffective assistance of counsel. Well, Dr. Forrest described that in the case of James Anderson.
You know, we're trying to get a push where if you're a defense attorney in a death penalty case, you should have a higher level certification of your qualifications to represent anybody, because people's lives are at stake. We shouldn't have people going on the job training, OJT, mm-hmm. when they're representing somebody in a death case.
Yeah. And you say the adversarial system itself has fundamental flaws.
You know, the interesting thing is, in our book, it started out as a conference we held, setting up an international network of people to look at this issue across nations. And we have the adversarial system. Most of Europe outside of England has the continental inquisitorial system, where you have an investigation conducted by a magistrate that is fact-finding in nature. No matter where the facts lead, they mm-hmm. can help the defense or the prosecution.
Yeah.
Here, so much depends on the quality of your defense attorney.
Yeah. Very interesting. We're talking with Dean C. Ronald Huff from the University of California at Irvine. He's editor and contributor to this powerful new book called Wrongful Conviction, International Perspectives on Miscarriages of Justice. And as we continue, we'll get some of those international perspectives and see how the U.S. criminal justice system measures up to other systems in other nations. You're listening to The Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Fia Kareem with your KRXA 540 AM traffic and weather report. Right now in Monterey, we have a traffic collision with no injuries on County Road G16 at Via Mallorca. And in Santa Cruz on Soquel San Jose Road at Summit Road, we have a two-vehicle collision with an ambulance responding. Taking a look at Hollister-Gilroy, we have two incidents happening. The first one is a traffic collision on Cienega Road at Highway 25. And on 7901 Fraser Lake Road, there is a pedestrian in the roadway. And weather, I've got some temperatures for you right now. Monterey is 59 degrees. Salinas is 61 degrees. And Santa Cruz is also 61 degrees. That's your traffic and weather on AM 540. Have a great afternoon. The Peter B. Collins Show will be right back.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale here to tell you about Monta Vista Wine and Spirits on Soledad Drive in Monterey. It's family-owned for over 40 years. They have all the best wines. It's the real deal. With a high-end liquor selection, it's all there. And if you have a special request, they'll take care of it for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is open every day 9 to 9. Call ahead. Your order will be waiting for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits, 19 Soledad Drive by Del Monte Center in Monterey. Reminds you to please drink responsibly. Robbins Jewelry in Carmel is open every day for your holiday and gift shopping. Robbins Jewelry is one of a kind, unique, and stylish. She uses sterling silver and semi-precious stones and will customize a keepsake right there on the spot. Robin is a native Carmel artist and silversmith. She's located inside the Dowd Craft Studio at Ocean and San Carlos. Robin has a big selection of organic bling. Great jewelry that's affordable. With free engraving and gift wrapping, go to Robbins Jewelry in Carmel.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
No, but we'll go anyway.
I'm with you.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. And Roy Rogers is ready to go. No, he's not the cowboy whose Happy Trail song we play at the end of every show. This is my buddy Roy Rogers, the blues guitarist, the king of the slide guitar. And if you just joined us, this hour, we're celebrating 10 years of freedom for my friend Dennis Jones, who was released after 23 years in San Quentin 10 years ago this week. Roy Rogers, B.B. King, and Carlos Santana joined together in a benefit concert that raised the funds that enabled us to pay the lawyers and the investigators whose work ultimately led to the release of Dennis Jones. Dean Ronald Huff has been, well, a friend and ally for many, many years. He was first at Ohio State and was recruited to help build this new department at the University of California, Irvine. He has contributed to and edited this new book called Wrongful Conviction, International Perspectives on Miscarriages of Justice. And you should be able to find it at Amazon. It's from Temple University Press. And Dean Huff, give us a little sense of the international perspective that you offer in the book. You alluded a moment ago that our system is different from the inquisitorial system that's used in many other criminal justice apparatus around the world. And do you find that those systems are less vulnerable to error?
You know, I believe they are. It's very difficult to prove it scientifically because cross-national stuff is fraught with problems. But here's the big difference to me is on the continent of Europe, where they have the continental inquisitorial system, outside of England, which is more adversarial. As I said, the investigation is done under the supervision of a magistrate, and the idea is to find truth wherever it leads. Since the 16th century in Germany, they have had a requirement over there in most of Europe that there has to be a balanced investigation, and that the defendant has a right to speak, that they have a right to question findings, and There are some people who argue that that system clearly is not perfect either because of the informal relations between prosecutors and law enforcement, that there still is bias towards prosecution. Nonetheless, if you look at it on balance, I think it's better than most of the time what we have, where the defense attorney is, the defense is woefully under-resourced.
Mm-hmm.
And we have anything, it's the furthest thing from a level playing field.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my biggest concern about the adversarial system. The adversarial system assumes that two sides go to all-out war to present the prosecution's case and the defense case. And the flaw with that, of course, is that they are differentially resourced. Occasionally it's reversed. When I was teaching at Purdue, Ford Motor Company was charged with homicide. Indiana law allowed corporations to be charged with homicide when the Pinto blew up.
Mm-hmm.
Ford had a battery of highly paid attorneys. And the prosecutor's office was working with some Notre Dame law students. So occasionally when you have a very wealthy defendant, Klaus von Bülow or someone like this, it can be reversed. But garden variety case, it's the defense that's under-resourced.
Now, coming back to the U.S. system for a moment, one thing that I didn't see addressed in your chapter on the causes is judicial error.
Yeah.
And I'm curious if you feel that, let me first offer my perception, that the courts have been packed increasingly with more and more conservative judges, many of them chosen because they support victims' rights groups and they pledge to be tough on criminals. Do you believe that our judiciary has tilted in a way that causes more errors and more wrongful convictions because of the ideology that, that shift represents?
You know, I think most judges try to do a good job. The cultural influences that I think are problematic is that the most typical preparation to be a judge is to having been a prosecutor.
Mm-hmm.
Not that many defense attorneys become judges. There is more familiarity with the prosecution, more informal ties to prosecution. We also have elected judges as opposed to many other nations. I personally would favor having a blue ribbon panel, appoint judges who then could be ratified by election if we wished, but they should be certified by a blue ribbon panel, I think, and have judges be appointed and then reappointed through election, reelected. And the politics gets involved in this, and so we have too many people pandering, both prosecutors who run for office and judges who talk about being tough on crime.
Mm-hmm.
And first of all, for the prosecutor, their ethical obligation is to pursue justice, not convictions. And in the United States, as we say in the book, whenever prosecutors are overzealous, and we find that they have allowed perjury, we find that they allow all kinds of evidence to come in that they know is wrong to get a conviction. Nothing happens to these guys. They tend not to have anything happen. We recommended in our earlier book they should be disbarred for life. In some cases, they should be charged themselves. If they knowingly allow somebody to go to prison, we might expect that from the Gestapo in Nazi Germany. We shouldn't expect it in the United States. So there should be some draconian consequences.
Ron Huff, if people are passionate about this issue of innocents who are incarcerated, where should they direct their energies?
I think they should try to make sure that the local prosecutor in their jurisdiction knows that they want justice pursued, not just convictions. That means that a prosecutor who might have a lower conviction rate needs public support because, first of all, if a prosecutor says my conviction rate's 95%, that probably means that he or she has won half their contested cases because 90% are plea bargains.
Mm-hmm.
But if you take on tough cases, before DNA, rape was tough to prove. It was her word versus his. A lot of white-collar crime cases are tough to prove. But that might be a courageous prosecutor. That needs support. Citizens need to support the Innocence Projects. I think let people know they want justice, not just convictions. Because, once again, it's a public safety problem if we get the wrong guy and convict him. The real offender's out there on the streets.
Yeah. Well, Dean Huff, it's great to see you again. I really appreciate the work you're doing, and there's a lot more that you're doing at UC Irvine. You're building a law school there side by side with the school that you run. And so I think that's a great spot. You're working on innocence projects and elements of that in the programs that you teach. So thank you for your commitment to this area, and maybe someday we'll have a criminal justice system in this country we can really be proud of.
That can be our hope, Peter. Good to be with you again.
That's C. Ronald Huff. Pick up his book, Wrongful Conviction. There's a podcast of this hour available for sharing with a friend. Log on to my website at peterbcollins.com and follow the links.
Bonjour, this is Véronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. I've created a special offer for you to try my French wines made from organically grown grapes. For a limited time, when you buy two bottles, you get one bottle free, and I'll even pay for the shipping. I know you love the taste of these handcrafted wines from my ancestors' lands, especially if you care about our planet and your health. Imagine, you can have organic French wine delivered to your door for less than $12 a bottle. I've made this free wine and free shipping offer available to you because I believe you'll become a lifelong customer once you've tasted our wines. The French Bouquet Collection at ecowine.com includes my red Chateau Véronique from Languedoc, my white Viognier, and my Blanquette de Limoux sparkling wine. All French, organically grown, and affordable.
For free delivery, click on ecowine.com/Peter B. That's ecowine.com/Peter B.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. The governor of Illinois vows to fight every step of the way. He learned today that he'll be fighting for his political life at an impeachment trial in the state legislature. WBBM Radio's Craig Delamore reports.
A defiant Rob Blagojevich went on the attack, saying the Illinois House voted to impeach him because he insisted on using his own powers to help those in need, creating programs the legislature rejected.
In many cases, the things we did for people have literally saved lives. I don't believe those are impeachable offenses.
He had health program participants by his side. The governor did not address charges that he tried to sell President-elect Barack Obama's vacant Senate seat, but he does say he expects to be exonerated of all allegations. Craig Delamore for CBS News, Chicago.
Roland Burris, the man tapped by Blagojevich to fill Barack Obama's Senate seat, was derailed today when the state Supreme Court refused to order Secretary of State Jesse White to sign and seal the appointment. Illinois Senator Dick Durbin, a Senate leader, says Burris cannot be seated without White's signature.
Today's job report only underscores the need for us to move with a sense of urgency and common purpose.
President-elect Obama says the December unemployment rate of 7.2% shows we're in a devastating economic crisis that will become more difficult to contain with time. CBS News correspondent Anthony Mason says things are expected to get worse, at least until an economic stimulus package kicks in.
Certainly the next 3 months, most economists believe, are going to be bad. And the forecast for the unemployment rate going ahead here, you know, in some cases are pretty bleak. I mean, we're hearing generally a lot of economists think it could hit 9%. There's some who are saying it might hit double digits. The best I've seen is around 8.5%. So either way, that means the next few months are going to be really tough.
Today, Boeing announced plans to cut about 4,500 jobs in its passenger jet business. December was the worst month on record for casinos in Atlantic City, New Jersey, revenue down 19%. And the famous Greenbrier Resort in White Sulphur Springs, West Virginia, is putting nearly half its employees on furlough.
The Israelis have offered assurances.
Our occupancy levels now are running at less than 100 rooms out of the 721 rooms that we have on property.
Spokeswoman Lynn Swan, the Greenbrier lost $35 million last year. Israel brushed aside the U.N. Security Council's call for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. Prime Minister Ehud Olmert called it unworkable. The U.N. suspended relief operations after two aid workers were killed by Israeli fire, but spokeswoman Stephanie Bunker says deliveries of food and medical supplies will resume as soon as practical.
The Israelis have offered assurances that they will work very hard to ensure protection of aid workers and of convoys.
It's estimated that 750,000 Palestinians in Gaza have no running water. The Dow lost 143 points to finish the week at 85.99. This is CBS News.
People are feeling it a little more these days. The ows are getting a little more owier, and the uggs are getting just a little uglier. Shoulders and necks are tighter, and when you exercise to work it all out, the soreness can linger. Tiger Balm feels your pain. Stress can make you ache and ugh. Tiger Balm patches and ointments work fast, and they're the powerful way to conquer pain, no matter where it comes from. Go from ow to ah with Tiger Balm. Works where it hurts. Available everywhere.
Who are all these people, Lisa? And how do they know who you are?
Oh, I used all the money I saved on my motorcycle insurance to buy my own fame. Isn't it great? These people love me.
Why do they want to take my picture?
Oh, I told them you stole my boyfriend and took him to a movie premiere. Sorry.
Saving you money on your motorcycle insurance is our business. What you do with the money is your business. Call today or visit GEICO.com to see how much you could save. GEICO Motorcycle. Let's ride.
On its way out the door, the Bush administration loses a fight over people who came in the door. CBS's Sam Litzinger explains.
It's the latest attempt by the administration to keep secret the identities of visitors to the White House. Government officials say disclosing Secret Service logs with the names would impede the president's ability to perform his constitutional duties. In so many words, a U.S. district judge says no. The court says the likelihood of harm is not great enough to justify curtailing the goals of the Freedom of Information Act. So it's back to the drawing board for the government. A watchdog group has asked for the records to find out if some conservative religious leaders visited the White House. Sam Litzinger, CBS News, Washington.
Barack Obama could have a permanent visitor in the White House, his mother-in-law. Transition officials confirmed today that Marion Robinson will be moving in with the first family at least for a few months. During the campaign, Robinson retired from her job as an executive secretary to help with the Obama's children while they traveled. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
How to update your bathroom without money going down the drain. Step 1. Take a look at all the stylish faucets and fixtures at the Home Depot. Step 2. Take advantage of all the new lower prices you see. Step 3. Step back from your gorgeous bathroom and take it all in.
Updating your bathroom is easier than you think at the Home Depot. We've lowered the prices on your favorite brands, Kohler, Delta, Moen, American Standard, and more. The Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. U.S. only. See store for details.
With Medicare Part D, you'll pay about the same copay anywhere. No wonder seniors are choosing America's most trusted pharmacy, Walgreens. There's no more shopping around for price, so join the millions by transferring your prescriptions to Walgreens. Just bring in your bottles and they'll do the rest. Not only will you get great service and convenience at Walgreens, you'll also feel safer knowing you have just one pharmacy helping you manage all your medicines. Walgreens accepts most Medicare Part D plans.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
You better make the connection, 'cause we ain't gonna let them steal the election.
Every week at this time, we set aside an hour to talk about election integrity, election protection, whatever you like to refer to it as.
But you never hear the tabulator tweaking late at night. you was all sleeping. A wham bam scam, and the program flips it from a cane. No way, this is for your own protection. You better make the connection, 'cause I ain't gonna let them steal the election.
The cop on the beat to prevent stolen election is in this country is the citizen journalist, chief cook and bottle washer at bradblog.com. His Bradness, Brad Friedman. Hey, Brad.
Hey, Peter. How are you, my friend?
Happy New Year. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Happy New Year back at you.
Yeah, and you're still on the road, right?
Still on the road for a little bit longer, out in lovely Phoenix, Arizona tonight.
Okay, well, great. We've got a lot to talk about. I want to get an update on the Al Franken situation and the legal machinations in Minnesota. I want to get your take on John Conyers' proposed legislation. It seems like a good start, but there's more work to be done. And also, Dave Berman is going to, he's just called in. He's got some tips on what's going on up in Humboldt County, where we talked to Carolyn Cernich just a few weeks back. And a little bit later this hour, we'll be joined by activist Lori Grace, who is on the trail trying to follow the story around the election process of Proposition 8 last November here in California. So let's start in Minnesota, Brad, because we called you into extra innings earlier this week to talk about the Monday decision where the election was provisionally certified and Al Franken was declared the winner by 200-some votes. Is that right?
Well, that's right. It's actually not provisionally certified. It's actually certified by the state canvassing board, and they have sent those results showing Franken the winner by 225 votes out of almost 3 million to the Secretary of State, Mark Ritchie, and all that remains now is for Secretary of State and the governor out there to sign the certification, send it to Congress, and Al Franken will be the new senator. But before they can do that, due to a very good provision, as far as I'm concerned, in Minnesota state law, if there is a challenge to the election, then the Secretary of State and Governor do not sign that certification, and they instead allow the challenge to play itself out, which I think is a great idea. And, in fact, Norm Coleman on Tuesday has now filed his election contest over 200 pages of, frankly, stuff and nonsense so far from what I've seen of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yet he's entitled to make this complaint, to file this contest. He has, and it will be adjudicated, and I hope soon, because certainly the folks of Minnesota deserve to have their senator, and as we have a media that we do in this nation, we've got a bunch of liars, phonies, and frauds like Rush Limbaugh, Bill O'Reilly, John Fund out there on the public airwaves claiming that Al Franken and the Democrats have somehow stolen the election in Minnesota despite one of the most transparent, thorough, and appropriate processes I have ever seen
in an
election going on.
So, is it time for me to set up another love fest with you and John Fund?
Oh, please, bring him on. Any day, I'm always happy to talk to my good friend, the liar John Fund from the Wall Street Journal.
Oh, he'll just hang up because, you know, like Ann Coulter, he's a victim of the liberal media.
Right, and those liberal facts that he can't seem to confront very very well.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when it comes to guys like Limbaugh and Hannity and Limbaugh and O'Reilly, they don't need to confront facts. They get 3 hours or more a day that they're allowed to just go on the air and lie about whatever they want and claim that Franken is stealing. The one you're going to hear the most of, I believe, that I'm hearing from the right-wing nuts out there, is that, oh, in many cases, in many precincts, there was more votes than voters. Well, as it turns out, that's a complete and utter lie, as far as I can tell, and as far as the complaint goes by Norm Coleman. You know, normally when they say there's more votes than voters, that means there's, you know, more votes than voters who are signed into the poll registers on election day.
Right.
They've changed the definition, Peter. Now, apparently, more votes than voters, as far as Coleman is concerned, means that in the process of the recount, they found more votes. Now, you know, on election day up in Minnesota, they use these op scanners, these paper ballot optical scanners,
right,
that are flawed, and they often miss votes that are legitimate votes, but for whatever reason, the the pencil wasn't dark enough or whatever it was, the ballot didn't get counted. That's why you do a hand count of paper ballots. That's what they did in Minnesota. And in many precincts, they found that there were ballots that were not counted originally by the op scanners. But when you look at them with the human eye, review them by both parties, challenge them, and send them to a bipartisan state canvassing board if there's any questions, often you find there are more legitimate votes in there than were counted on election day. That's what Coleman is now referring to as more votes than voters. And you're going to hear that a lot from the lying right-wing wingnuts who own most of the nation's media, unfortunately.
Now, Brad, this Minnesota canvassing board, doesn't it include at least one justice of the Supreme Court?
Excuse me. Yeah, it actually includes two justices.
Yeah, I thought so.
Both Republican appointees. So there's actually only one Democrat on the canvassing board. The other ones are all either Republicans or nonpartisan. So this state canvassing board, which I believe it was, yes, John Fund, who actually referred to them as pulling some form of shenanigans, is actually more Republican than Democratic. So it's, you know, that stuff and nonsense. Yet when this lawsuit goes to the courts, as has been the case in the past when Coleman has gone to the courts during this hand count, the justices that were also on the state canvassing board have recused themselves. So, you know, hopefully the process is fair there, despite the fact that the Supreme Court at one point just made a horrible decision and really was the low point of the entire hand count when Coleman went to the Supreme Court because they had found about 1,500 improperly rejected absentee ballots. Once the Secretary of State had asked all the counties to review the absentee ballots that they had rejected, he said, you know, there are four reasons to reject a ballot. I want you to make five piles and put each of those absentee ballots that were rejected into the appropriate pile for the reason they were rejected. The fifth pile, then, would be ballots that should not have been rejected in the first place. And Mark Ritchie, the Secretary of State, called on them to be counted. Coleman went to court, said, no, don't count those. Stop counting. We don't want any more ballots actually counted. And the terrible decision, frankly, that the Supreme Court made was, well, those should be counted, but only if the Secretary of State and both campaigns agree that they should be counted, thus giving, I think for the first time, a campaign, you know, veto power.
Right, minority rule.
Whether ballots can be counted or not.
Yeah, interesting. Now, Brad, you know we don't protect nobody on this program, so let me just ask you, has the Franken campaign pulled any boneheaded moves in this recount process?
No, actually. They have, there's some stuff that I wish that they would have done that I wish would be done as the part of any, you know, post-election hand count, and that is to reconcile unvoted ballots. And this is almost never done. As far as I'm concerned, it should always be done. There should always be an accounting of the unvoted ballots. Easy enough to do. We know exactly how many ballots were ordered from the printer before the election, and there should be a reconciliation of the voted ballots, the spoiled ballots, and those ballots that were not voted, that were just blank. Those need to exist because that's, you know, if you want to steal an election, one of the easiest ways is to, you know, use blank ballots, ballots, and the old-fashioned way, stuff the ballot box.
Sure.
So, you know, I think that the Franken campaign or Coleman campaign should have called for an accounting of those unvoted ballots. They didn't. Other than that, you know, I must say that the Franken campaign has been very good. They have wanted more ballots generally counted than not counted. As a matter of fact, those improperly rejected absentee ballots I mentioned, the Franken campaign wanted all of them counted, no matter which way they fell. Now, mind you, absentee ballots in these in this particular race had tended towards Franken, so I'm sure there was some calculation there.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, you know, you count every vote. If it's a legal vote, you count it.
Now, Brad, so, we have a special.
They behaved well.
We have a special guest who was on last hour, who's still in the studio with me, Dean Ronald Huff from UC Irvine, and one of the, we were talking about wrongful convictions and chain of custody of evidence is a critical issue in the process of busting through wrongful convictions. You've often talked about chain of custody of ballots and election materials, and there were some anomalies. Bill O'Reilly was accusing Al Franken of driving around with ballots in the back of his car or something like that.
Yeah.
Do we have any significant chain of custody issues in the Minnesota recount?
Again, not that I'm aware of. This, this nonsense about 32 ballots in the trunk of a poll worker's...
Oh, it wasn't Al's car, okay.
No, it wasn't Al's car, although I'm sure by the time it got to Bill O'Reilly, it was Al's car. I'm sure Franken personally stuffed the ballot box from his own home, according to Bill O'Reilly. But no, as it turned out, there was absolutely nothing improper. Those 32 ballots weren't kept in anyone's car. They were actually driven appropriately on election day to the polls to be counted at the polls. They were absentee ballots, and that's the way they do it in Minnesota. But by the time the car got there, the polls had closed, so the car drove back. There was always, I think, three election workers with those ballots at all times. They were stored securely over the weekend until whatever the period of time was. I can't recall now.
Yeah.
But stored appropriately and securely until they could be brought in and added to the total ballots to be appropriately counted.
We're going to take a break and return. Brad Friedman with us this hour from bradblog.com. If you have a election protection question or comment, you can call us toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And unless you already have one, if you call in with a good question or comment, we'll award you a DVD of the documentary Murder, Spies, and Voting Lies. It's the Clint Curtis story from Florida in 2000. More ahead here on the Peter B. Show.
You're listening to KRXA 540.
My name is R.J. Moyer, President of Family Heritage Management Services. I am a retirement specialist, and I protect my clients' money, and I can guarantee an income for life. We don't recommend stocks, mutual funds, or variable annuities. These are risky securities. With securities, you have unlimited upside, but you also have unlimited downside. Our clients do not lose money in negative markets. Do you have a multi-generational IRA? Why not? It's been your right since 2001. Don't let Uncle Sam be your biggest beneficiary because your banker or broker is sleeping at the wheel. Call us right now at 831-794-8485 to receive your free brochure. We will then set up your free IRA and retirement checkup in our Salinas location. Call 831-794-8485. It's a new market, and it's time for a change. Call 831-794-8485. If you transfer your IRA, 401k, or any of your retirement accounts today, we will add 10% to your full account value. $100,000 becomes $110,000, $400,000 becomes $440,000, $700,000 becomes $770,000. It's a new market. It's time for a change. Call 831-794-8485.
Hi, this is Cynthia.
And this is Paul at the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore.
Have you heard about the events at Pilgrim's Way in the Secret Garden? Maybe too late? Our events include workshops, lectures, and book signings by recognizable and well-known authors locally, nationally, and internationally on a wide range of topics.
Don't miss another chance. You can receive Pilgrim's Way event announcements personally by going to pilgrimsway.com and click on Events to subscribe to the private email service listed. An event calendar is also posted on the Pilgrim's Way community bulletin board inside the bookstore for your convenience. Support independence. Come in and pick up a free KRXA bumper sticker. We're on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in downtown Carmel.
Or give us a call at 624-4955.
Can choice be saved? On Thursday, January 22nd, please join Planned Parenthood Mar Monti in commemorating the 36th anniversary of the landmark Roe v. Wade decision. Join us for our annual luncheon, Can Obama Save Choice? Attorney Mickey Welsh will address these questions and more. The event will be held at the Hyatt Regency in Monterey on January 22nd from 11:15 to 1:15. Tickets are $25 for students and $35 for general public. For more information and to RSVP, please call Christina at 784-1109, extension 103. That's 784-1109, extension 103.
Good evening, this is Thea Kareem with your KRXA 540 AM traffic report. Right now in Santa Cruz, we have a traffic collision with no injuries on Green Valley Road at Devon Lane. And on northbound Highway 17, just south of Granite Creek Road, there is a traffic hazard. A bag of wood is in the number 1 lane. Also in Santa Cruz, we have a traffic collision with major injuries on Soquel San Jose Road at Summit Road. You may experience some slowing there. Moving over to the Hollister-Gilroy area on New Avenue at Dryden Avenue, there are a couple of dogs in the road, so watch out for them. And on Cienega Road at Highway 25, we have a two-vehicle traffic collision. CHP is on the way there. That's your traffic and weather on AM 540. Have a great evening, everyone, and stay with the Peter B. Collins Show.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I remain your humble host, Peter B. We continue with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com, talking about election issues a little bit later this hour, the latest on the Mike Connell airplane crash that took out the top Republican IT operative, a man suspected of colluding with Karl Rove in the heist in Ohio in 2004. And, Brad, just one more item. You had sent me some information on a poll in Minnesota related to the Coleman-Franken recount. And the poll shows that most people think that Coleman should concede and that the Secretary of State, Mark Ritchie, has done a good job with the recount. And you take exception to the first part.
Yeah, well, you know, I think it's interesting that most people think he should concede. I don't know that they're necessarily right. I think that, everyone has their right to a day in court, and I think we've gotten to this place in this country where we're too quick to say, oh, you know, we've determined the winner, the guy who is seemingly not the winner must concede, that the democracy is threatened if he doesn't get out of the race immediately. I think that's nonsense. I think we've got the time to go to the courts. Now, you know, given Norm Coleman's suit and what seems to be a lot of unfounded allegations in it, that's another question. If he's abusing the law system, the court system, that's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
But he has a right to his day in court.
Yeah.
So, you know, if he wants to challenge, that is his right. I don't think he necessarily has to concede. But, you know, the longer these processes go on, the more you've got with the state of the media, as I said, the more you've got these liars out here who are putting out stuff and nonsense. And I'll give you one example. There was a story this week that a felon was discovered to have voted in the race, and he's been convicted. He illegally voted. He's been out of jail for some time. He was in jail for when he was, I believe, 20 years old. He had some form of sexual relation with a 15-year-old. He's out. He didn't know he was not allowed to vote. He went ahead and voted. And, of course, you can imagine, had he voted for Franken, the outrage you would have heard from all of the right-wing liars about felons or voting for Al Franken and everything else. Such as it is, he had voted for Norm Coleman. So I suspect you and almost everybody else in the world hasn't heard a peep about it. So that's just the way the media is right now. And I think there has been a tendency over the last few years to say, whoever wins on election night is the winner. Everyone else must concede. I think it's nonsense. But by the way, I do agree, Mark Ritchie, the Secretary of State out there, has done a terrific job in almost every aspect of this recount and should be lauded for his transparent processes.
Let's jump back to the left coast here. Dave Berman joins us from Eureka, and in Humboldt County we have had many conversations with the director of voting up there, Carolyn Cernich, And Dave, you sent me an email this week which reports that Carolyn Cernich revealed to some of the people who ran this separate vote count that revealed the flaws in the tabulation system, the GEMS Diebold system, that they were told and told to keep a secret that she was going to replace the Diebold equipment with Hart InterCivic machines. Tell us about that, Dave.
Okay, that is correct. It's actually kind of a couple of days old news. There's been a lot that's actually happened since then. So to recap, we learned in December on the night of the 16th at a public meeting that the registrar here intended to get rid of the Diebold machines, bring in the Hart InterCivic machines, like you said. We later learned that that was not the first time her intention was disclosed. She had previously told some people and asked them to keep it a secret. And these are people who are volunteers on the Election Transparency Project, which is a citizen-run, open-source audit mechanism that revealed in December that there had been 197 ballots secretly deleted from the official results here in Humboldt, certified as accurate by our registrar. She had to then recertify them. And part of the new news, as of yesterday, we've learned that the Transparency Project has revealed yet another mistake. The results are going to have to be recertified again because 57 ballots were apparently scanned twice.
Okay. Dave, there's more to this, so stand by. I can't stop the break that's coming like a freight train here. So stand by. We'll pick up there as we continue. After the break as well, we're going to talk with Lori Grace, an activist here in the San Francisco Bay Area, who's asking important questions about the conduct of election that passed Proposition 8, banning gay marriage here in California. We'll continue with Brad Friedman and the gang here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Ever thought about shipping your child to a remote island? Want to send them to their room for the rest of their life? I can help. I'm Mark Lecluse, an intern psychotherapist practicing in SoCal under the supervision of Dr. Chaim Barton. For the past 10 years, I've been helping parents, teens, and kids overcome challenges in their lives, and I'd like to help you too. I can work with your family to resolve conflicts, improve communications, and solve problems. Together, we can turn struggles and challenges into opportunities for growth and connection. I offer an affordable sliding scale, and I'm currently accepting new clients. Please call for an appointment. 831-818-4033. Parenting doesn't have to be so hard. I'm Mark Lecluse. Give me a call. 818-4033. That's 818-4033.
Looking for a big city dining experience with local ma and pa prices and service? Look no further than Jim's American Chinese Restaurant at 8069 San Miguel Canyon Road, Prunedale, just behind Burger King. Stephen Lowe, master chef and co-owner of Jim's American Chinese Restaurant, brings to Prunedale his 35 years of experience in cosmopolitan San Francisco. Stephen serves traditional American and Chinese dishes with subtle, delicious French and Italian influences. Jim's has great meals for $10 to $15. For extraordinary food to die for and prices that won't dent your budget, make it a point to visit Jim's American Chinese Restaurant in Prunedale. Jim's is open Monday through Saturday, 11 to 9, and Sundays, noon to 9. At Jim's, you can dine in or take out. And catering is also available. Call 663-4888. That's 663-4888. To make reservations at Jim's American Chinese Restaurant, call 663-4888.
Go ahead. Take a deep breath. Yeah, there's nothing like that new car insurance smell.
I love it.
Want to take it for a test drive?
Sure.
Wouldn't it be great if you could test drive car insurance? Well, maybe you can.
Notice all the impressive standard features. Good neighbor service for extra comfort and stability. And look how great it handles around those hairpin turns in your budget.
Check out the company 40 million other drivers trust, State Farm. No one gives more discounts to more drivers, and nobody takes care of you like a State Farm agent.
Who's that?
That's your built-in security system, your very own State Farm agent.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Hey there, and who are those guys?
Oh, that's your award-winning claims department.
Wow.
So talk to a State Farm agent today and kick the tires on our car insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
I'm Justin Hambly, your Monterey Bay State Farm agent. Call me today at 831-688-3683. That's 688-3683.
Sometimes things just make sense.
Sure, like buying a scooter when gas prices go crazy.
Or putting Sharp business equipment in your office.
How does that make sense?
It makes sense to have the number one digital copier in America working for you, right?
Sure.
Well, that's how it makes sense.
I get it, but...
Here, try this.
Since 1981, this family-owned business has been about one thing, results, which is why Tri-County Business Systems is a Sharp dealer. Sharp is technology-driven, featuring OSA, open systems architecture. You can customize applications that promote efficient workflow. And because they're built to last, your total cost of ownership is reduced for long-term results. If you're a QuickBooks user, Sharp's OSA system allows you to quickly scan directly into your client's folder right from the machine. So call Tri-County Business Systems at 758-1474 and learn more today. Tri-County Business Systems, 758-1474. Solutions that connect with you. Tri-County Business Systems.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Oh, baby, you haven't seen nothing yet. We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, our election protection hour every week with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. All right, Randy, can you get to the vocals here? All right, we continue now with Dave Berman, an election activist in Humboldt County, and Brad is with us as well. Brad, do you have any, before we go on with Dave, any comment on the initial report that Dave has made here, that Carolyn Cernich told people she was going to dump Diebold / Premier and buy Hart InterCivic tabulators, and she told them this back in November but said keep it secret. And this, of course, is very troubling to people who don't trust any machine by any manufacturer.
Yeah, well, I was actually trying to understand this story because I've been following Dave's coverage of it over the last day or two, and he's doing a great job as ever. My question for Dave was, are you saying then that before she discovered the problems with the Diebold op scanners in their post-election process, that she had already determined that she was going to go to Hart InterCivic at that time, Dave?
That is correct. She was quoted in the Eureka Times Standard on December 22nd saying, quote, "This plan that is proposed predates any of the problems that were found to exist in this election," end quote.
And what then would have been her reasoning back then? I mean, other than the fact that Diebold makes crappy machines that nobody should use, what was her reasoning back then to move from Diebold to Hart InterCivic?
Well, that's just it. We didn't hear about it at that point. We only heard about it well after it became public that there had been a discrepancy in our originally reported results from November.
Now, per-
I would say direct your question to her.
Park Burstrom, I think is the way you say his name, he was one of the members of the Transparency Committee, was he not?
Yes, he works on the Election Transparency Project, and if I could continue to develop the story here for you, because there's other additional breaking news. The registrar needs the approval of the County Board of Supervisors in order to go forward with this switch to the Hart InterCivic e-scans. That is going to happen next Tuesday, the 13th, when the Board of Supervisors meets. And there has been a bunch of organizing efforts going on here to tell the supervisors, hey, let's slow this down. Let's have a public process to evaluate multiple alternatives to Diebold rather than just rushing into this real false alternative, you know, this very comparable system basically with the same kind of problems, secret corporate vote counting. And in the second of two breaking stories that I've posted at the We Do Not Consent blog, last night the Humboldt County Republican Party passed a resolution and announced it today in a press release that they are behind, you know, they support this idea of slowing down and having a public process. They don't want to see the county rush into this just as many of us don't want to see it. So for Humboldt listeners, please come to the county supervisors meeting next Tuesday. We need you to help us convince them to slow this down.
All right, Dave, I appreciate that. Brad, any follow-ups there?
And, let me just echo. I have seen firsthand in county after county around the country showing up, citizens showing up at these county Board of Supervisors meetings, making noise, does make a difference. So please don't leave it to, you know, Dave Berman and these other folks. Mm-hmm. If you're up there near Humboldt, please get to that meeting if you can and speak up. Use your voice as a citizen. It will make a difference.
Brad, let me jump in here because on the screen, I just got word here that Carolyn Cernich is on the other line. So, Dave, I'm going to put you on hold because we'll get audio chaos here if I leave you both on at the same time, and we'll come back to you for a comment after we talk to Caroline, okay?
Okay.
Carolyn, sorry. And Carolyn Cernich, thank you for making the call. Delighted to talk with you again.
Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, you bet. This is an open forum, and you get to speak, too. Tell us your side of this story.
Well, I'd like to make clear that it wasn't my intent to keep it secret, as Hart Bostrom and Dave Berman are stating. The fact is that this is a plan that we've been working on. This system has been demonstrated in Humboldt County on at least three occasions. I believe that Mr. Berman was there for at least one of those demonstrations. And the vendor was there, inviting questions and inquiry. But when that was back in 2007, in November of 2007, in fact.
All right.
And Carolyn, just to clarify, that's the system that was being demonstrated was the one you'd like to go to, the Hart Inner Civic system, correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
And there was plenty of opportunity for public input at that time. At that time also, we had an elections manager who was very much a fan of the Diebold system. And so when we, in 2006, decided on an accessible solution, VotePad wasn't certified by the Secretary of State, and that was our first choice. Our next choice was the Hart Inner Civic eSlate, knowing that that might lead in the future, would probably lead in the future, to a conversion of our entire system from the hybrid system that we've been working with since 2006 of Premier or Diebold then, and for our paper ballot system, and Hart Inner Civic for our accessible solution. It's been a problem to deal with it and to deal with programming the election in two separate proprietary software formats, and it's been a real burden for staff time. Additionally, as I stated many times before, the object of this plan that I'm putting before the board on Tuesday is twofold. Number one, to get rid of 14-year-old equipment. And that was a fact whether or not we had discovered through our transparency project the missing votes.
Carolyn, a couple of questions. One, you said that there was plenty of time for public comment back in 07 when you were demonstrating the Hart OpScan system. What was the public comment like back in November of 07? Is this a system that the public wanted to use?
It was a system that appeared superior. There were a number of features in this system that the public, everybody that came to the demonstration expressed appreciation for, and one of them was Hart's Ballot Now system. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it gives an open forum for the adjudication of write-ins or ballots that have errant marks and so on.
If the public was in favor of it at that time, why did you not go with that, and why did you go with Diebold instead?
I didn't go with Diebold instead. Diebold is the system that's been here since 1995.
I see.
It was my choice at that junction to leave the Diebold in place because our then elections manager was very familiar with it. He liked the Diebold system. I didn't, but as a gesture to him, I mean, we were taking on this extra burden now of programming the election in two different softwares. It would have been easier for him, but he still liked Diebold, so we stayed with that until he left.
Okay, well, then one further question, because I've spoken directly to Hart InterCivic about this. They have dropped out of the federal certification program. Their software and hardware is no longer being tested by the EAC, which means if there are any changes...
Are you clear on the fact that nothing is being tested by the EAC now?
What's that?
Nothing is being tested by the EAC. They're in the process of developing new guidelines for the testing of elections equipment. They have been in the process of developing those guidelines for almost 2 years.
That's actually not that's not true. Well, it's partially true. They are looking at new guidelines, but they have already begun their new testing procedure, and Hart has opted to drop out of that federal certification program. They are no longer participating, at least currently, with any
That's
of
right.
your machines. So if any of your machines, if you did go to Hart and you had to make any modification of any type or any update of any type, it could not be done because California law requires that it be federally certified, and Hart is not participating in that program at all at this time.
That's true, but it's my understanding also that no system has been certified in 2 years. Is that
well,
true?
Well, there are systems in the pipeline that have not been certified. My understanding is because they're not meeting the certification requirements now that the EAC has improved their testing system. None of these systems are going through. But the point here is that Hart isn't even trying. They have opted out of that program for the time being. So
yes.
Go ahead.
For the time being until those the new guidelines are developed.
No, the guidelines are already developed.
Okay. We have a misunderstanding there, and I'll check into it, too.
And the reason I say it is because you know, I think firsthand, having dealt with your experience with Diebold, you know, problems come up, small bugs or whatever that can have a big effect, and they may need to be dealt with, but they cannot be dealt with a Hart InterCivic system unless they're willing to put in a whole lot of money and a whole lot of time to go back through that federal process. You are going to be stuck
and that is
with the dead end.
The same situation with every election.
You go with Hart.
That they all have to be certified by the Secretary of State. This is not unique to Hart.
But they cannot be certified by the Secretary of State until after they have succeeded, after they have passed the
That's
federal
correct.
Process, according to state California state law.
That is correct.
And so I'm afraid you're going to jump out of the frying pan and into the fire by going with another dead-end set of hardware and software here in choosing Hart, who has, you know, chosen to no longer participate in that federal program.
Another consideration here is that I've already spent over $600,000 on the accessible portion of that I was required to do under HAVA.
For disabled voters,
To bring Humboldt County into minimal compliance. In other words, I only had one accessible voting device for each polling place to begin with.
Right.
And those are Hart.
Right.
Are you suggesting that it would be feasible for me to switch to, say, ES&S for the whole system?
I'm saying that ES&S is still participating in the process. I don't care for, frankly, any of these companies. I like the system that you
I understand. I understand.
I'm sorry?
I understand that you don't care for any of them. But don't you think it makes more sense to add to the system that I've got and replace one paper-based system with another paper-based system?
I don't see any, frankly, at this time, any upside in moving to a different OpScan system that uses similarly flawed software, in particular with the company who is not currently able to upgrade that system if upgrades are needed. So I'm afraid you're going to, you know, you've already spent all the money on the Diebold. Now you're going to spend the money on the heart. I'm afraid that a year down the road, you're going to have to go somewhere else.
The accessibility half of it.
Okay, I'm running short of time here. Carolyn, can I ask you to hold for a minute because I want to give Dave Berman an opportunity to speak, and then I'll come back to you one more time, okay?
Sure.
All right. Dave, two quick points. Number one, is it correct what Carolyn Cernich asserted that you were at one of the meetings where the Hart InterCivic system was demoed? And number two, do you underscore that you still feel that she was secretive about this plan?
The demonstration that I attended was for the eSlate machine, which Carolyn is correctly citing as the machines purchased for HAVA compliance, which I think was more like 800,000. I did not attend any demonstrations of the eSlate. I don't know when those occurred. I'm not doubting her if she says they happened.
Mm-hmm.
The second part, she said to me flat out that Park's petition, which you can find at the We Do Not Consent blog, which alleges that he was among a couple of people who was informed and asked to keep this news secret, the news of the proposed switch to Hart, she confirmed that that was accurate. So,
okay, let me get her response, and then I'm out of time here. But, Dave, thank you for your coverage of this. I really appreciate it. Carolyn, your reaction?
Dave uses the term secret. What I suggested was that the plan was in development and would be presented to the board originally intended for the 16th of December. That was bumped back a couple of weeks. It was not to, as they stated, keep it secret so there wouldn't be any public input. That's just not the case.
Okay.
And if I could just, I know you got to get to a break, Peter, very quickly, Carolyn, if I could just recommend, you know, 12 months ago or whatever it was when you did have a public period to discuss this, that's, as we say in blog time, that 12 months ago, that was 12 years ago. If you are going to change to a new process, a new system, might I recommend a new public process? We've learned a lot since then, and it might be good to slow down and let the public take a look at this equipment.
I appreciate your opinion.
Okay. Carolyn, I appreciate your willingness to join us here to talk about this.
Thank you.
All right, and we'll talk again.
Thank you for the opportunity to talk to you.
Carolyn Cernich, Humboldt County Registrar of Voters. We'll take a break and return with Brad Friedman. And Lori Grace is going to update us on questions about the way Proposition 8 was passed here in California. I'm Peter B. Collins.
You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Good evening, everyone. This is Fia Kareem with your KRXA 540 AM traffic and weather report. Right now on the northbound 101 on the Oak Avenue off-ramp, there was a small black dog standing in the off-ramp, so please watch out for him. And in Santa Cruz, we have a collision on Green Valley Road at Devon Lane. Taking a look at Hollister-Gilroy, we have a report of a brush fire on Highway 129 at northbound 101. And weather, your forecast for tonight will be clear with lows in the lower 40s. For the weekend, we are expecting lots of sunshine with highs in the mid-60s to lower 70s. That's your traffic and weather on AM 540. Have an awesome weekend, everyone. The Peter B. Collins Show will be right back.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
The $64,000 question.
I've got a word or two to say about the things that you do.
Hi, it's Bob Oliver with the Quantum Leap and the $64,000 question. Where do you go to get a free checking account, no minimum balance, and they give you free money? And the answer is Wachovia Bank in the Sand Dollar Shopping Center in Sand City across from Borders. Wow, I got a lot of advertising in there. Remember, you're going to get money, free money, just by mentioning my name, Bob Oliver, at Wachovia Bank. Free money, free checking, and no minimum balance. Think for yourself. The Quantum Leap and KRXA 540.
Wide open, Robinson for a three off the inbound. Two for two, Nikan Robinson. Four on three off the left side, Jamal Boykin, the open floor. Goes in and Viney and scores.
This is the voice of the Golden Bears, Roxy Bernstein, inviting you to join us for another exciting season of Cal basketball right here on your home for the Bears.
The winning Cal Bears, 14-2, return this Saturday for an afternoon game at 2:30 with Washington, KRXA 540.
And you just heard why we love doing a live radio broadcast. You never know what's going to happen. You never know who's listening. You never know who will call in and say, wait a minute. We continue with His Bradness, Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Any thoughts on that exchange, Brad?
Good. I'm delighted she called in. In fact, I hope we'll talk more about it in the future. I'm a little troubled that at the end there, her last comments, that I'm not altogether clear why she would not want to hold a another public process to allow the public input on the new, mm-hmm. potentially new system. It wasn't shown to folks, you know, but 12 months ago, and so much has happened over the past 12 months. We've learned so much about voting systems, optical scan systems. I'm not sure why she would be against that idea. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we'll pick that up on another day.
I thought you presented it artfully and diplomatically, and I love the exchange. A quickie that came in by email from Karen, a benefactor in Sacramento. Whatever happened to the Charlie Brown race? I know Tom McClintock was declared the winner there, and I believe the margin was greater than 2,000 votes. Do you happen to know, Brad, that's California District 2, the old Doolittle seat?
Yeah, I'm sorry to say I don't have any additional information on that. It's been, there were so many questions about so many races after the election. I had to pick and choose, and unfortunately that was not one that I was able to follow as closely as I would have liked.
Well, I know the outcome, I just don't know the numbers. So that's
I'm not sure. I know there was questions about it, but I was not able to dig deep into that one myself. Mm-hmm.
Lori Grace joins us now, an activist and a supporter of Velvet Revolution and other election protection efforts in this country. Hi, Lori. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks.
Thanks for holding on. We had scheduled you for about 20 minutes ago, but the show took on a life of its own.
I agree.
I wanted to ask you to update us on the questions that have been raised about the way that the election and the parties conducted the process that led to a declared victory for Proposition 8, which is a constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriage.
Well, my doubts started happening right after the election. There was earlier polls showed that there was a small lead for no on 8, and then after the election, it was yes on 8 was winning, and then I was immediately kind of suspicious because I had made some study of who had contributed to yes on 8, mm-hmm. and I then found when the Election Defense Alliance had done screenshots of the Edison Mitofsky exit polls that right out at 8:05, the Proposition 8 was losing at 52-48, and then at 12:33 a.m. it was winning at 52.5-48.
Mm-hmm.
And
now, Lori, has any
votes counted in the meantime?
Lori, has anybody told you that exit polls only count in the Ukraine?
Yeah. Yes, I have actually. The Bush administration and Karl Rove makes a real point of that.
Mm-hmm. Now, do we have any available remedies here when there's a ballot initiative involved? Do you have to demand any investigations or recounts at the state level?
Well, we've tried to do some things. Deborah Bowens received several letters two from the Velvet Revolution, and one that appears from a Richard Tam of Election Defense Alliance, and requesting an investigation. And I was able to talk to Emily Levy, who wrote the request for Velvet Revolution, and she said she received a form letter back.
Hmm. All right, Brad, what can you add?
Well, yeah, and by way of full disclosure, I should say that VelvetRevolution.us, Brad Blogg is a co-founder of VR, so I want to be clear on that.
Right.
Yeah, we have requested an investigation because aside from just the exit poll questions, there were a number of questions with problems with voting machines and a number of things that we've enumerated at Velvet Revolution. Emily is heading up this effort for us, and it was not an out-and-out form letter, but it sure was close to it from the Secretary of State's office saying, exit polls don't really tell us anything. There's nothing here to investigate. And Emily has this week replied to that note saying, well, wait a minute, we enumerated about five different things here, and this deserves a legitimate response and, in our opinion, a legitimate investigation from the investigative unit at the Secretary of State. So we're hoping there will be more to come on this, and this is what comes of election systems that frankly don't have the transparency that they should. So I hope there'll be more as we move ahead.
And we're real tight for time here.
Very helpful in making noise to exactly that end.
Lori, just briefly, I understand you're raising questions about the fact that the Pro 8 people retained Mike Connell, the Republican IT guy who died in a plane crash in December.
Well, for $200,000 was given to him for web work, and it is on the Secretary of State's recorder that that was paid.
All right, I've got to end there, but we'll follow up with that as time permits, and I thank you for joining us today. Also, the NTSB has ruled initially that the Connell air crash was an accident. Brad Friedman, thank you very much. We'll talk to you next week.
Look forward to it, my friend.
More at bradblog.com.
Has your computer been slowing down? Are you having problems with your email? Or when you go to the internet, is your browser taking so long to load that it seems like the worldwide wait? I'm Luke Ford, CEO of My Computer Works. We help people just like you with computer problems you can't fix. With one easy call, we can help you get your computer working the way you want it, speeding it back up, making sure you can send and receive emails, and making the internet fun again. You'll speak to a U.S.-based technician who knows what they're doing, who can usually fix your computer on the very first call. If your computer's been slowing down, you can't get your email to work, your internet's taking forever, or if you're not sure what's wrong, but your computer's just not working the way you want it, call My Computer Works, and we'll help you fast.
Call My Computer Works right now, toll-free, 888-629-9618. Tell them Peter B. sent you, 888-629-9618. One more time, 888-629-9618.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich remains defiant even after the state House of Representatives voted to impeach him.
I am not guilty of any criminal wrongdoing. That issue will be dealt with on a separate course in an appropriate forum, a federal court. And I'm confident that at the end of the day, I will be properly exonerated.
In the meantime, he faces trial in the state Senate later this month. Mike Parker of CBS television station WBBM was at the governor's news conference.
He took no questions and simply walked out of the room after he had made his case, a case that we might describe as hearts and flowers. I mean, he did just about everything but play the violin for this one. It was quite a performance, but in the end, a rather typical Rod Blagojevich performance.
At one point, he read from Alfred Tennyson's poem, Ulysses.
To strive, to seek, to find, and not to yield.
Blagojevich appointed Roland Burris to Barack Obama's Senate seat, but Illinois senior senator Dick Durbin says the appointment should be put on hold. If the governor is convicted at his impeachment trial, he'd be removed from office.
It will mean the succession to office of Lieutenant Governor Pat Quinn. He will then have the authority to make this appointment in a clean, legal, respectable way.
Quinn says Blagojevich should resign now. Economist Peter Morici predicted the December unemployment rate would come in at 6.9 or 7%. It turned out to be 7.2, leading him to declare...
The economy is in a depression.
Morici says the only thing that will bring us out of it is massive government stimulus. More from CBS News correspondent Anthony Mason.
As bad as the job number is, it's only part of the problem at this point. You know, as much as employers are laying people off, they're also cutting back hours, and in many cases, they're cutting back wages. So this goes even deeper than just the 7.2% unemployment.
The economy lost more than 500,000 jobs last month, bringing the jobless total for the year to 2.6 million. If you're old enough to remember the original Mickey Mouse Club, then you'll remember Cheryl Holdridge.
Roll call!
Cheryl!
Next to Annette Funicello, Holdridge was considered the most popular Mouseketeer. She went on to roles in other TV shows, including Leave It to Beaver.